Just remember Thursday. Thursday. Can you remember Thursday?
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. It's Steve Cochran Show here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in. Steve's out playing 642 holes of golf up in Exmoor this weekend.
A slight exaggeration. So I don't think he's playing at Exmoor today.
He's not?
No, today the senior players, the pros, are playing.
Oh, yeah.
He played yesterday in the pro-am.
Okay, yeah.
I believe he has his member guest today at his club.
Oh, I see. Okay.
His club in East St. Louis, next to the trailer.
Yeah, next to the double wide.
Got it. Okay, I'm just figuring this out. You know, I know that you guys play a lot of golf on this show, and I just want to make sure that I'm accurate.
Yeah, you are.
652 holes of golf.
That would be a bit of an exaggeration. Not by much.
Just today. He's just doing that today.
I talked to him a little bit yesterday. He played the 18 at Exmoor, and he said Scott Verplank let him ride in his cart a few times, which was nice because he has the bad knee. So I guess that guy is a good guy.
Yeah, there you go. We're learning. We're learning about the professionals and how nice they are.
And Pat Brady caddied for him.
Oh, did he?
I wonder if he's a good tipper.
Good to know. Mary Sandberg's here, of course. Dave Annett, Steve Grzanich, Joanne Jeanette in for Mary Vandeveld this week. We got a great show lined up. Peter Alexander's going to join us later this hour, talk a little bit from NBC News, NBC Nightly News, talk about, of course, the NATO summit, which just wrapped up, and preview what's going to happen next with meetings both in Britain and in Russia for President Trump. We'll have that conversation. Also, the Emmy nominations coming out later today. Nick DiGilio's got some ideas of what he thinks might show up on that list. We'll talk with Nick coming up here right at 6, right after the break at 6:15. And the 7 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with Eric Adelstein, do some politics. Rick Pearson will join us, talk state politics. Dean Richards in the 8 o'clock hour, and also the swap meet, as we mentioned. And 9 o'clock, live music in studio. That'll be the first time we've had live music in this studio, in the Skyline Studio in the Navy Pier side here in our new studios. Half Gringa, they are opening up for the Flaming Lips, A Taste of Chicago. Tomorrow, or Saturday, this weekend, whenever Flaming Lips play with their big bouncy balls and everything they do.
And
in
it's the only, the 4-day Taste of Chicago, right? It's
the, right, not the 42-day version. They're down to the 4. Rahm Emanuel's very efficient.
I like that.
Yeah, daily, he liked Taste of Chicago year-round. Emanuel's 4 days, that's all you get. 4 days of turkey legs. Hot turkey. Yeah. Lukewarm turkey legs. Hot outside. Lukewarm.
Yeah. But when else do you see people walking around right off Michigan Avenue with turkey legs?
With turkey legs.
This is true.
And so we got a lot going on today, so let's get to it. Let's start with the top 6 at 6.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Don't kick. Get your kicks. With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, let's get right to it. The Cook County Forest Preserve officer in the middle of the video scandal has resigned. The video in question captured the officer's alleged indifference over a man berating a woman for wearing a Puerto Rico shirt at a Cook County Forest Preserve picnic area. The video went viral, sparked outcry, and the officer was being investigated. Now, he's resigned. And Cook County prosecutors are considering hate crime charges against the man in the video. Wow. Yesterday, today was supposed to be the day that he was supposed to go in front of a disciplinary hearing. He was going to explain himself. And before doing that, over the wee hours, the Forest Preserve let us know, the media know, that he had resigned. So that's not happening.
You know, before video was always in play, it was two sides of a story, three sides of a story sometimes, you know. And then now everything's in video, and it, even though it's clear what's going on, people still see what they want to see. There's people defending different behaviors.
The police union came out and said that last night. They said, well, let's not rush to judgment. There's more than what is seen on the video. And I'm like, even if there is more, what was on the video was egregious. So, I mean, even if there's more, if there's a reason, what would be the reason for the police officer to be like, eh, go ahead. Harasser.
It reminds me, Dave, of is it a catch or not a catch?
Exactly.
All right. John Schnatter, also known as the Papa John's guy, used the N-word in a private conference call. Once this news came out, many sponsors and partners distanced themselves from the fast food pizza chain. And as of this morning, John Schneider has stepped down as his role on the board of Papa John's.
University of Louisville.
That's the other
he's
thing,
a
too.
Trustee.
This is crazy. So,
and that wasn't the worst thing that he said in this conference call.
Gosh.
I don't know if you went through and read the story.
No,
but he related a story about when he was living in Indiana, when he was growing up in Indiana. He said people in Indiana dragged African-Americans from trucks until they died. And it was part of the story that he kept talking about racism and the effects, I guess, on him or his life growing up. It was just all of it was just
was he using it as a story to talk about how the world has changed why would he bring that up?
It's a very good question. They were having a discussion about how to avoid negative publicity and also deal with these issues, and you got me on that one, Jay.
I just wonder. I wonder about context, like everything in there, and this is what we were just talking about in the video. You know, it's so easy to be able to pull out a slug and be like, he used the N-word on a private conference call, and for all of us to get all up in arms about it. But then you hear a little bit of the context, and you want to know, what was the purpose of the story in the first place? Was he, you know, recounting how terrible it used to be, and now it's so much better? Like, what was he doing?
Well, and what was it he said about Colonel Sanders, too, Steve?
No one got mad at him for using that word.
He said it, and nobody got mad.
Yeah.
Right, and then this all in the context of, you know, remember the stuff he was saying about the NFL protest?
Right,
you know, when you think about all of that and this, you're like, wow, okay.
Well,
he used to be in those commercials with Peyton Manning.
I was going
to
say, who's going to throw the football to Peyton Manning now? And also, the University of Louisville story is interesting because Papa John's has naming rights on their stadium for 23 years.
Yep. Papa John's Stadium.
Is there at least a clause that says if this is bad pizza, we can get out? Like, is there a way
to get out? If it's racist pizza, we can get out.
If it's racist pizza, this is null?
Major League Baseball has suspended a promotion with Papa John's, the Papa Slam, that is a 30% off or 40% off discount on pizza the day after a grand slam is hit. So
there you go.
Everybody's running from this guy.
Croatia beat England to advance to the World Cup final and play France. What possibly the coolest moment in all of sports history. English fans watching the World Cup in Moscow serenaded their losing footballers with Oasis. I get chills on that. Not only because that song, I'm sure, is huge, and you know, Beatles, like Oasis is Beatles like in England, and I'm sure everybody knows. But the idea that that's not your typical sports song that would bring people together, and for them to serenade their footballers with that song, I think that's awesome.
I don't care much for Oasis, but that song's a jam.
Yeah.
I agree.
Okay, so the question, this could be the text question of the day, too. If in a fantasy world, total fantasy world, the U.S. had a good soccer team, and that soccer team advanced to the finals, or the final four, if you will, and we lost, and it was such a great ride, and we decided to serenade our soccer team with an American song, what would that song be?
Neil Diamond, America.
Right.
I love that song.
Yeah, that's a good
one. That would pump me back up.
That actually is one I think everyone. That's the issue. Is like, what's the song? It can't be too much country. It can't be too much rap. You know, it's got to be something right in the middle. You know, that's really going to grab everybody's attention. Something like this. I think this one. Dave knows this one.
I do.
See, we could all sing that.
Dave's not approving, though.
I don't see that happening, Justin.
Oh, Joanne is loving it. She's dancing in the traffic booth there.
I love Miley.
See,
I'm sorry.
I think Miley is the perfect.
She's a hot mess lover.
She's the perfect person to bring us together after a devastating loss.
You know, here's the bottom line. We're not serenaders. We're not. It's one thing after a Blackhawks goal, Chelsea dagger, and all that, but after a loss, I don't see it.
I think it could happen.
Doesn't Notre Dame serenade after every football game in the corner?
All college teams do their alma maters at the end, but usually it's with tears in their eyes.
Yeah. I think that 312-981-7200, text question today, what song would you want to serenade the losing soccer team with?
Speaking of text from the 219, they are telling us it's 5 days, the Taste of Chicago.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you for that.
Sorry, thanks for that. That extra day is really going to... That's more turkey. More turkey legs.
How about Don't Stop Believin'?
See? That's what I'm saying. Okay. Like, there you go. We're on our way. See, that could... That has legs as well. Those are three good choices, guys. Twitter is removing fake followers. See this story? Which is a bummer because I really, really, really thought they liked me. Yeah. The internet is mad that Forbes called Kylie Jenner a self-made millionaire in their latest richest women in the world listicle. The issue at hand, the phrase self-made. That phrase usually is reserved for those who built their empire from scratch. But in this case, Jenner, a Kardashian, was born, of course, as a Kardashian. So hard to call her self-made. I take nothing away from her, but self-made may not be the right choice for a daughter of the Kardashians.
It might be the new self-made.
Self-made.
I mean, she could do nothing.
Yeah.
But she decided to start the makeup line, you know, put her name behind it.
Put her name on it. She's not in there making the makeup.
Also, she was in news because she stopped using lip fillers this week. So
That could be. I mean, if she was in Britain, that could be sainthood.
Is this Kristen Cavallari thing? I mean, is she going to be next? The next self-made
billionaire? Yeah.
But I would get Cavallari a little bit more in that area, self-made, because she. I don't know what her family is, but the issue with Kylie Jenner is she has a family that had a ton of money, and all of her decisions are
right. She
made
probably had
by
a few
family.
Doors open. For her.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, it's her mom. If you know, her mom is saying, you got to get in lipstick, you got to get in this, you got to get in that, this opportunity. So I feel like that's another conversation we're going to continue to have today, but whether or not Kylie Jenner is self-made. All right.
That's it. All today for the Top 6 and 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
All right, coming up, we're going to talk with Nick DiGilio about the Emmy nominations that come out today. He has some ideas of what he thinks should definitely be up.
He is Nick at Night, DiGilio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Joining us on the line, Nick DiGilio. You can find Nick, of course, 1 to 5 here on WGN Radio every night. And the Emmy nominations are out today at some point. And I know later this morning is usually when they do it. Nick is on the line to talk about what he thinks should be nominated and what probably won't. Nick, good to talk to you, bud.
Morning.
So let's talk about this. I mean, let me first ask you, as someone who immerses himself in television and film, do the Emmys, as an operating body, do they usually get it right?
You know, like any awards thing, they sometimes get it right, they sometimes get it wrong. And, you know, like when you nominate Modern Family 15 times in a row, you get it wrong.
And they'll probably win, right?
That's usually I won't win, but it'll be nominated. There's no question about it.
Is that lazy on that part, Nick? When they're going for the 14th?
It's partially lazy, and it's partially like what's expected. Like for instance, Game of Thrones will get 9,000 nominations this morning, and that's because everybody expects it to get them.
Right. Which category do you look to as the most interesting? Because I always look at supporting actor in a comedy series or actress, because those seem to be people who are stealing the stage when they get up on that screen.
Well, you know, I mean, supporting actor in a comedy series specifically, if it doesn't go to Louis Anderson in Baskets, they should just shut down the building.
They got some interesting people in that category. Titus Burgess from Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Also, Henry Winkler and Barry. He is really good in that show.
He's great in that, and I really hope Barry breaks out and gets a lot of nominations. Hader deserves a nomination. The show deserves a nomination. It's a terrific show, one of the best of last year.
Okay, so the question for many will be Roseanne, of course, which had a tremendous run and had huge audience numbers. Do you think that it'll show up in the Emmys after its scandal and its controversy?
Well, it depends. I mean, it didn't finish its season, so... I'm not really sure whether or not it's going to do that. But, you know, like the voting deadline, I think it was still on the air when the voting deadline happened. Mm-hmm. So there's a good chance that it might get some nominations.
So what are you looking at? What do you think was the best television? I know it's such a generic, large question, but why don't we start with drama? What do you think has to be nominated?
Handmaid's Tale. without question. It's this absolutely stunning show. I am a huge fan, but it's under the limited series, which is kind of iffy when they break, because they break these things up. Mm-hmm. But I am a huge fan of the insanity of Twin Peaks. The Twin Peaks reboot from last year is without question the craziest thing that has ever been aired on television. I loved every episode, and I have no idea what the hell went on during any of them.
It's always
but I would love to see it get some nominations,
because you're talking about limited series and you talk about the way they do television now, both on Netflix and Hulu and Amazon and other places. They're only 6 to 8 episodes, and I think of shows like Stranger Things, which came out around Halloween, right? And it came out, and it was because everyone binge watches it, it's out after a week essentially, but that would be a show that would show up for this Emmy cycle.
Yeah, no, and it wouldn't be under limited series. That would be under regular series. It's a very nefarious, weird thing here, where what's the difference between a limited series and a regular series? And this whole limited series thing, I believe, was invented so that more shows and more people could get nominated. That's what it seems like to me.
All right, how about comedy? What are you looking at for comedy?
Atlanta. Yeah. Atlanta's the best show on television.
We agree.
Nothing comes close. It's the best show on television, and sometimes it's not funny, but it falls under the comedy category, and Donald Glover is revolutionizing television, and it is without question the best show on TV, and I hope it garners like every nomination in every single category. The second season of Atlanta was even better than the first, and the first season of Atlanta is one of the best seasons of television I've ever seen in my life. Wow. So Atlanta is the one that I'm really rooting
Coastline,
for.
Coastline, we love that show. That's one of our favorites. Lakeith Stanfield in that show is just amazing.
He's amazing.
And I have a question about Marc Maron in the show Glow. I'm watching now, he is really, really turning it on. I wonder if this could be his year.
Well, you know what? I hope he gets nominated. I don't know if he will. The competition in the supporting actor comedy category is pretty big. But I have no doubt in my mind that Alison Brie is going to get nominated in Best Actress for a Comedy. I have no doubt in my mind. And again, the second season of Glow, even better than the first season. How far along are you? Have you watched it all?
I've got to about like maybe 6 episodes in. I'm at the point where, I don't want to give it away, but yeah,
When you get to episode 8, prepare yourself.
Good to know. That's next.
Are you doing that thing, Justin, where you're savoring those last 2 episodes?
Yes.
Because I know when we binge stuff at home, we almost don't want to watch we don't want it to be over, so we don't want to get to the last 2.
Yeah, it's a little annoying in the sense because I want to keep going, but my wife is like, wait, let's wait till next Thursday. And I'm like, no, now. Yeah, that show's really great. Okay, so overall, do you think there'll be any shows that are surprises that won't make the list that should?
I don't know about won't make the list, but I think there's this amazing show that was on BBC America called Killing Eve, which was extraordinary. Sandra Oh was the lead in it, and it was crazy and weird and out of control. And I got a feeling that it's going to sneak in there, and people are going to be surprised and like, what the hell is this show? And it's going to end up with some nominations. I think Sandra Oh, in fact, is going to get nominated for Best Actress in a Drama.
There you go.
And for those people wondering what your parents' review was, they didn't see a movie this week. You said they weren't feeling well.
I wasn't feeling well.
I was
sick on my birthday, which is really always a pleasure.
No. That's the worst. Well, the next film club screening coming up, I Want to Hold Your Hand, as part of the Zemeckis Fest. It's at the AMC Rosemont 18 on August 7th. You looking forward to that?
Of course. It's Zemeckis' first movie, the first movie he ever directed, and it's a great one. It's about a bunch of teenagers who try to sneak into the hotel where the Beatles are staying on the night they play the Ed Sullivan Show for the first time.
Oh, that's so great.
It's a great movie.
Nick DiGilio can be found on WGN Radio, of course, 1 to 5 every night. And you can see his film club screening, I Want to Hold Your Hand, as part of the Zemeckis Fest at the AMC Rosemont 18 on August 7th. Nick, thanks for joining us.
All right, buddy.
All right, there you go. That's great. And nominations coming out. Glow is a great show. It's the one that I'm binging right now. So I wholeheartedly co-sign what Nick said about Atlanta. I think Atlanta is just groundbreaking television. They're doing great things on that show.
I'm still enjoying what's the one he said gets too many nominations?
Modern Family.
We still laugh at that.
It's funny, yeah. It's a funny show. All right, much more to do here on the Cochrane Show. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve. Coming up, we're going to talk with Peter Alexander about the NATO summit and what's next for meetings both in Britain and Russia with President Trump.
Back to the Steve Cochrane Show on 720 WGN.
It's Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman here, Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, of course, Steve Grzanich, Joanne Jeanette. Online with us, joining us now, Peter Alexander. He is with NBC News, of course, NBCNews.com and Nightly News with Lester Holt. Peter, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Justin, thanks so much for having me. Appreciate it.
So let's get right to the reaction to the NATO summit. The president this morning tweeting out and also talking about victory, the idea that his firm stance on getting NATO to confirm more spending when it comes to their own budgets, that he says it's a victory and they've committed to doing so. Is that true?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of fact-checking that needs to be done. Let's try to just frame this. This was basically, if you look at the NATO summit the last 48 hours, this is basically classic Donald Trump, right? He flies into Brussels for the NATO summit. He created, as we watched yesterday, before they even broke into their orange juice or their croissants, this sort of crisis that sent NATO into an emergency session. And then he holds a last-minute news conference, and today, just a matter of less than an hour ago, declares victory without really stating any clear differences. It's not clear exactly what did change. He said that now all the countries, the NATO powers, have committed to providing more money to this defense spending, to this alliance. But as soon as the president was done talking, we just heard from the French prime minister, who said nothing actually changed. In fact, that's not the way it went down. But the reason this is vintage Trump is because, of course, he comes in and he makes a big authoritative show, right, where he says he takes Germany to task and takes all the nations to task. And at the end of it, he says, look, you know, I softened them up. I really fought hard. And all of a sudden, we're getting more money. The truth is NATO allies have been moving in this direction since at least 2011. For the last 7 years, they have been giving more money toward the commitment that the U.S. has wanted from all these allies, the 2% commitment.
Yeah.
At that point.
It is interesting because I wonder how, when the American public sees this, because there seems to be in the reporting, if you read across the board, the idea that there is a commitment in place of 2024. 8 of the 29 countries have already hit their commitment and all have committed to doing this by 2024, that it isn't just bluster and rhetoric that's coming from the president. Why does it have to happen now as opposed to playing out in the agreements that have happened in the past?
Well, let's be clear. I mean, the president deserves some credit, right? Because these countries are giving more money right now. To be fair, though, they have been giving more money for the last several years. The last several years of President Obama's administration, they also began giving more money, going in this direction. So the bottom line is there is value in this alliance giving more toward the budget. The president, obviously, is challenged, and rightfully so, because a lot of the facts he provides, you know, fundamentally aren't true. Today he said the U.S. pays roughly 90%. I think he said that we pay probably 90% of NATO's budget. The truth is the U.S. pays something like 22% of NATO's budget. If you do defense spending alone, it's probably closer to 67%. It's significant. The U.S. obviously is carrying most of the weight here, but his numbers are off there. Nonetheless, the president, you know, this effectively often, as with most things with Donald Trump, he likes to frame it as about me. Look what I was able to accomplish here. Right. Look what we've done. And he put it in a nice little package by coming in yesterday and sort of attacking the allies. And then today saying, look what I accomplished, tying it up with a bow. And now he heads off to London.
He didn't mention it in the press conference, but I think he has on Twitter that he doesn't think 2% is enough, that he thinks that the military spending from all NATO allies should be at 4%. Is that something that has any legs? Because that's a huge number, especially for some countries that are having trouble even convincing their legislature that 2% will work.
Yeah, and to be clear, the U.S. doesn't even pay 4% right now. The U.S. pays something like 3.5%, right? So
which
if the president were suggesting this 4% number, as you talk about, not to get lost in the weeds of numbers, then he'd be suggesting the U.S. needs to pay much more as well. He did say in the news conference that they made an agreement, a commitment that these countries will be paying even more. That's what the prime minister from France said is simply not true. He said nothing changed. The 2% commitment stands, and all the countries will continue to head for that goal by 2024.
So when can we judge the results of this? I know he's taking some credit now and he's throwing out some misinformation, but you have to give him some of the credit. When do we judge this? You don't know in 6 months. Is it, we have to look at it,
right?
You know, like when you draft for a sports team, you don't know until they start playing, you know, 7 years in or whatever.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. And I think obviously there's plenty of, the president has plenty of critics, and he has plenty of supporters here, too. And again, I think there is credit deserved for his efforts and for success in getting NATO countries to give more money. I don't think there's ever sort of a clear moment where you know, oh, this is really working, but I think what can't be understated is how is the impact of some of the tough language. You know, if you just read the newspapers from Germany today, one said of his initial remarks coming in, this isn't a crisis, this is a catastrophe. The bottom line is what makes NATO unique is this sort of shared values, right? This isn't really, it's not a country club where you pay your fees, and if you don't pay your fees, you get booted out. This is like a club for a communal joint defense system. And at the end of the day, if what they project is not this sort of unified front, if there appear to be these divisions, as were made very clear by the president's comments yesterday, at some point, a lot of people suggest, a lot of allies suggest, that undermines the fundamental effort here behind NATO to sort of secure that region largely against Russia.
Peter Alexander's on the line, NBCNews.com, and of course, national correspondent for Nightly News with Lester Holt. Peter, let's talk about what's next for the president today. He travels to England, he travels to Britain to talk with Theresa May, and of course, talking about the divisive situation there and their own scandal when it comes to Brexit. And then he moves on to Helsinki in the meeting with Vladimir Putin. What do we expect from the meeting? What is the intention of the meeting today in Great Britain?
Well, so he heads off to the UK, right? He'll have a visit with the Queen. He'll also visit with Prime Minister May. And what's notable about that is that the president over the last 24, 48 hours has really been sort of undermining Prime Minister May as well. He was critical of her, but praising her sort of domestic ally, Boris Johnson. For those who don't know Boris Johnson, the sort of crazy-haired, you know, former British foreign minister, as it were. They were rivals domestically, and the president has seems to be sort of fueling the turmoil. He said, oh, they got a lot of problems over there, as opposed to sort of trying to, I guess, back up in some ways the British leadership. It was notable today in his news conference. He said, I'm looking forward to going to the UK. He said, people there really like me a lot. The fact of the matter is, recent polling shows, I think only 11% of Britons believe that President Trump is great or a good president. You know, President Obama was much more popular in the UK. That's neither here nor there. He's going to spend very little time in London, where they're expecting some major protests. But as the president himself said, he said, you know, the easiest stop of this trip is likely to be my visit one-on-one with Vladimir Putin. He said the other parts may be tough. That's likely to be the easiest part. I think a lot of Americans would be surprised to hear the president say that, given what should be our close special relationship, as we describe it, with countries like the UK.
He doesn't seem, as a, you know, when we talk about the UK and the stance he takes and getting on Twitter and meddling a little bit in their turmoil, but then also talking about the way he has handled the European Union and not to mention our allies in NATO, it doesn't seem as of right now Europe is that excited about the president being there.
No, he's not a popular president in Europe, as evidenced by his criticism. For one, he's imposing tariffs on the EU, on some of America's closest allies. He comes in as his arrival at the NATO events and sort of attacks some of the European leaders there. So he's certainly not popular in that region, but that's not the reason he won as president. Reason he was able to successfully win as president of the United States, as he'll indicate, is because I'm not the president of Europe, I'm the president of the United States. And for many of Donald Trump's supporters here, this sort of antagonizing allies, or, you know, some describe him as the great disruptor, is exactly what they were looking for. They were done with the status quo. They wanted somebody who they felt was looking out for America first. There are a lot of people who have served in government for years and have looked out for America, diplomats who have served for Republicans and Democrats, who say this is also a very dangerous effort by the president, and you can't afford to antagonize allies like that without there being potential consequences. Yeah.
Peter Alexander, NBCNews.com, and also Nightly News with Lester Holt. Peter, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
There you go. That's interesting. He nailed it right at the end. The president is not the president of Europe, and a lot of people who, Americans who voted for President Trump, were sick of the status quo about what they perceive to be our allies in European countries walking all over us when it comes to deals. And this is a great example, NATO, because at the core, the president is saying, enough of the old way where you guys aren't paying as much as we are. That's over. This is not the post-World War II 1955 new world order. This is 2018. That's gone. You guys got to step up and pay your bills. I know you're saying 2024, but you have blown by deadlines in the past, and I know you're going to do it again. And if I have this little time in office, I'm going to hold your feet to the fire. I don't know if I have a problem with that.
He referred to him as the great disruptor, and right. You know, every era, Barack Obama was a unifier. You know, so we won't know. Like I said earlier, the damage right. or the benefits until after he's probably no longer president. Just because
and that
you
isn't
don't
that
know.
The, isn't that the rub though? Mm-hmm. It's such a, because every you can look at it every which way. You can blame everyone blames it on the president before or gives the president before the success.
Right. When we had the housing issue right. with when the Bushes were in office, 43. Everyone blamed the Clintons, but they were gone already, you know, like right, it's been right. set up from the past.
And yes, what this comes down to is, you know, when you have a problem with your friends, you talk to them privately about it.
Right.
You don't go on a stage, a world stage, and badmouth them. I think that's probably what a lot of world leaders have an issue with. These are the folks that, you know, the one and only time that the article of NATO was put in place was 9/11. They came to help us. And they're going to be there again if we need them, just like we're going to be there when they need us. So you really, these are private conversations that should be happening, not in front of cameras and microphones.
Yeah. There was I heard a NATO, someone who used to work in NATO saying that this was a successful financial trip for the president, but a disaster politically, that we won't know the fallout because the harsh words and the way that he attacked Germany will have lasting impact and hopefully will not rear its head in ways when we need our allies. So we'll continue that conversation.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Yeah, the sun is right over our shoulder in our Skyline studio here at 303 East Wacker. It just blinds the entire studio. It's amazing. Speaking of blinds, we might need to get blinds in here.
There are blinds.
Oh, well, we can't put the blinds down. It's a beautiful
no.
view.
No, well, then why get blinds? Here was your last
Here's
sentence.
The conundrum.
Let's get blinds,
Let's get
but
blinds.
We can't put
but we
blinds
can't put
down.
Blinds. I'm just telling you, it's a very nuanced situation we're in.
You need those the tinted film
yes,
that goes
right,
on windows.
Right.
That would be better.
Well, this is a good segue into our I want to get to the text question, too, because a ton of people have brought in great suggestions for music that if the U.S., it's a fantasy world. It's a hypothetical. If the U.S. made it to the World Cup and lost, World Cup final, or the Final Four, whatever you might, and we were in the stadium and we all got together collectively in unison and serenaded the team after their loss, as the British did yesterday, English did yesterday, playing or all singing Oasis, Don't Look Back in Anger, what would the song be? We've got Don't Stop Believin', America by Neil Diamond. Party in the USA.
Dave
Miley
particularly
Cyrus.
Liked that one, I think.
630 says, proud to be an American. Born in the USA. A lot of USA version. But that's what I loved about the Oasis song. It wasn't like, God rest the Queen, England. It was Don't Look Back in Anger. It wasn't about soccer. It wasn't about football. Right. It was about, you know, the idea that don't look back in anger. Don't be mad. You did a good job.
That's why we should steal it from them.
We should just steal
that
song?
Yeah, we should boost them.
Right.
For sure.
815 says, Ray Charles is America. And I like thinking of a crowd. Trying to pull that off.
Yeah, I don't think you could do that.
Oh, there you go.
But I think that a texter pointed out that the Cubs fans serenade, but that's after a win. It's just like Blackhawks fans after a goal. But after a loss, you don't hear a lot of people singing.
Yeah, right. You don't see Go Cubs Go. Although maybe they would do. We'd never been. I guess, well, what happened last year when they lost the NLCS?
I don't think people were singing Go Cubs Go.
630 says, Big Girls Don't Cry.
Oh, there you go.
Well, that's nice.
I know at Sox games, I think when the opposing pitcher gets pulled out of a game, they all sing na-na-na.
Hey,
yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah. You could say that, but it's not
Although,
really positive.
You know, I went to the White Sox game not too long ago. I've gone a couple times this year. And some of those traditions, it's, you know, it's a Sox fan. Like, I'm waiting for Thunderstruck at the beginning or AC/DC when they come out. Here come the White Sox. They didn't do that. And the same with the na-na-na. When I was watching the A's pitcher came out, everyone's like, meh. No one cared. I was like, what's happening? What's happening, White Sox fans? So, yeah. Anyway, you know, I'm actually, Mary, you need to pay attention today because I am waiting for the dreaded call from the Four Seasons guy. Four Seasons air
heating
and air conditioning. You get to give you the hour heads up because my AC unit went out yesterday. And they're going to call me to tell me when they're on the way to the house.
Well,
so I slept with fans last night like a real person.
That's horrible.
I know, right?
I don't. We are very sensitive sleepers at our house, and we need to have very chilled temperatures And so I would not be able to handle. No.
That's the worst thing that I could imagine ever happening to me is my air conditioning going out.
You guys would not have been happy in Copenhagen. Copenhagen, it was warm. They don't have air conditioning. So you crank, and they don't have. This was interesting, too. No screens in the windows at our hotel. It was a really nice hotel. But you throw the windows open, and there's, you know, it's just.
Do they not have bugs?
There were no bugs.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, there are birds, lots of birds. But.
Well, I'm worried because I'm optimistic. You know, it was a squeaker. I was hearing the squeaking, and then it was got real, almost like metal on metal. And I was like, "Uh-oh, this is never good when you hear your system doing that kind of screech."
No,
that was the night before that kept us up. But when the guy showed up, this was yesterday. I was hoping to be done yesterday. He said the pipe was frozen. Like the actual from the AC unit to the house, that whole thing was frozen. My wife took a picture and sent it to us. I was like, I've never seen that.
Oh yeah, that happened to me once. When the coolant runs out on the air conditioner,
that's what happens.
That's what happens. Yeah.
Well, so that's the hope.
Need to fill it up with some more coolant.
I'm like, just show me the aisle at Home Depot to get the coolants, and I'll go pour that in like it's windshield washer fluid. But he had to shut it down to get it to be unfrozen, so today he can come out this morning and check it out again and see what the problem is. So I'm hoping it's not a full replace. That's the, you know, as a homeowner, you cross your fingers.
Oh, Dave and I were just talking about that. We both have older AC units.
Yeah, me too.
That's we're just trying to, every year the guy comes out to, you know, we do the checkup right before summer starts, and he says, you know, this is an older unit. I'm like, yes, and I want it to last for another 15 years.
I always stop them before they start that rant. You know this, I know. They don't make this one anymore. Got it.
Yeah, but they keep I go through the same thing every year too. But the coolant is very highly regulated, and you just can't go and buy it at some place.
See,
and
this is where Trump needs to stand up for us air conditioning unit owners.
Well, you would think,
owners.
Right, that they would start making it easier now that he's president. But no,
I need the regulation in the coolant industry too much. Too much. Whatever presidential candidate steps up next and talks about unregulating the coolant industry, they got my vote.
Actually, I think two summers ago, our air conditioner broke, and the guy came, and he took our garden hose and sprayed water on the air conditioner, and boom, it worked. Maybe it was dirty.
Yeah, did you have those weed, those white fluffy weed things? Because I had that on our air conditioner.
Yeah, there were probably a few weeds.
You have to clean this.
Well, like, there you go. Well, let's hope that's the case.
Good luck.
Yeah, coming up 7 o'clock hour here on Steve Cochran's show. Rick Pierce is going to join us. Before we do, let's get a break, and then we'll get the headlines. Stay with us.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
On 720 WGN.
Here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in. Steve's out today. Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Brzanich, Joanne Jeanette, we're all here. 312-981-7200. We're watching the stories this morning. Of course, the Forest Preserve, Cook County Forest Preserve police officer who apparently did not help a woman who was being harassed over her shirt has resigned. He was supposed to step in front of a disciplinary board today to explain his reasoning for not getting involved. But instead, he resigned before that. So that's breaking this morning. And also, this is a really interesting story. It said that the feds are going to reopen an investigation into Emmett Till, the black boy who was from Chicago, who was killed in 1955. That was was the outrage from that really sparked the civil rights movement. Emmett Till, that case, the feds say they're going to reopen that investigation. Which is an interesting move, but also, of course, a story that I don't think was ever resolved. So it is good that they're reopening. I don't know how they do it, but it's great it's being reopened.
Does it say if it's being reopened because they have new evidence or they think it was handled improperly?
Well, the Justice Department, it says that they had a report. They issued a report in March that they're reinvestigating based on new information, quote unquote. New information. So
yeah, and this is kind of cool because it follows publication of a book that in the book the woman who accused Till of grabbing her that started the whole thing with Till acknowledged that she lied in that way back then. So who knows, maybe there are family members that were part of a conspiracy that are still alive that you might be able to pursue on this.
Right.
Who knows?
Well, we'll keep our eyes on that, of course, that the news this morning. The other news coming out of the state of Illinois. Really, when you talk about state politics, we are in the middle of a gubernatorial election. It's going to start to heat up. You're seeing the television ads that are coming out. But the new ads that come out have started both campaigns, essentially calling the other dishonest and distorting the facts. The one specifically, a Pritzker ad that Governor Rauner's people say is dishonest and distortion. Let's talk about that with Rick Pearson. Rick Pearson with the Chicago Tribune, political reporter, longtime political reporter who also does a Sunday spin on Sunday mornings. Rick, good to see you. I hate not seeing you in front of the tower anymore. All right.
Don't we all kind of miss the tree of knowledge out in front of the Tribune Tower?
So this is an interesting story because it really stems from investigations into a company that Governor Rauner had once been involved in, or may still be involved in, that was right at the heart and the center of the story of separating families. Explain.
Well, Governor Rauner was a partner and is still receives investment income from GTCR, the private equity firm. And that's basically where he derived much of his wealth. And Pritzker is out with an ad saying that among the myriad of investments that Rauner has, there's an investment fund that also is invested in this healthcare company that has been retained by the Homeland Security to maintain health care for these detainees as a result of the zero tolerance policy at the border. And the ad says that Rauner profited by a company that's helping detain families.
Now the Rauner camp says that is dishonest.
Well, a couple of things here. One, in the ad, it basically says that Rauner hasn't given any thought to the separation of families. And that's kind of taken out of context because the actual question was whether the governor has given any thought to telling the Trump administration it would not send Illinois National Guardsmen to the border. If you remember, the
right.
Trump administration was basically inquiring about having various state National Guardsmen go to the border as part of the zero tolerance policy. Rauner's response was that I haven't given any thought, but in the context of the ad, it's kind of placed that he hasn't given any thought to the issue of children being separated from their families, where Rauner has indeed said that he finds that policy repugnant and called for it to end.
We are seeing
this. So we've got that aspect of the commercial. Then you've got the issue about the investment in the healthcare company, in which the ad says that Rauner profited from that. You know, his administration says that investment in the company specifically hasn't generated any profit, so there are no profits. If they had perhaps used the word that Rauner is an investor in that company, then they could have gotten away with it. But regardless of that, the Rauner administration says that company is not separating children. It's merely providing health care, as it has for a long time, in various private and public facilities.
Rick, you're a longtime reporter in Springfield. We have a gubernatorial race that features two prominent investors, venture capitalists, people who have invested in a lot of companies. I mean, billionaires, self-made, if you will, or as we were talking about earlier. But you can expect this kind of stuff to come out and drag this dirt through because both of these men have been involved in many different investments in their lifetime.
Yeah, and I was kind of surprised to see whether Pritzker was going to go down that road, because here's J.D. Pritzker. He's worth $3.5 billion. Even with Governor Rauner and his myriad of investments, you've also got Pritzker with his myriad of investments. And there's little doubt that there's going to be issues of controversy and question when it comes down to these individual investments.
So, Rick, the process of putting out the bad, you know, the ad that criticizes, and then the other opponent responding, does anyone ever not respond? Like, is there any precedent of, like, ignore? Obviously, they're just slamming each other, and it's going to go on for the duration of the campaign.
It's the nature of the business that you're going to have attack ads. There's going to be the response. normally the way candidates respond these days, especially when you have two guys with a lot of money, is you respond with your own ad. And you don't even necessarily address what they're attacking you for. You find a new avenue of attack and go after the person attacking you. And again, with these wealthy candidates, we're going to see just as much advertising as each side can buy to try to go after the other guy. And the question always becomes, when is too much overkill? And when does the message stop getting delivered to voters? And in the end, you end up with candidates that basically those in the general public that don't really follow politics, it becomes the choice in many people's minds of the lesser of two evils.
Yeah. I wonder, you know, with this story, you see this these ads almost being treated like news stories where they have to come out and debunk that and question it or say that it's dishonest or misleading. It's a strange time we live in because I think most people know that what is in an attack ad is usually distorted or dishonest.
Right, right.
Are we at a different point now where it seems like these are being used as factual?
I don't think it's that much as it is maybe even a greater role of trying to play fact-checking or try to explain that things aren't quite as simple as these ads try to portray things. And, you know, that's we always see a lot of attempts to try to fact-check. But this becomes a very murky slope to go through when you're dealing with investment portfolios and things like that.
Yeah. Rick Pearson, he's the host of the Sunday Spin. What's coming up on Sunday?
I've got Christian Mitchell. He was just named, he's a Chicago Democratic State Representative. He was just named as the interim executive director of the State Democratic Party, which is going through some of its Me Too struggles. And we'll talk to him about whether his appointment kind of represents a new direction for the State Democratic Party.
Oh, I love that conversation. We're going to talk about that coming up with Eric Adelson. Rick Pearson, of course, you can find him on the Sunday Spin here on WGN, and of course his fantastic reporting in the Chicago Tribune. Rick, thanks for joining us, bud.
Thank you, Justin.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Steve Cochran Show here. Justin Kaufman, Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Steve Grzanich, Joanne Jeanette. We've got Chevy Silverado we give away every day. You can find that at WGNRadio.com.
/contest.
Every day?
Well, we give one away every day, every hour, on the hour.
No, we are giving one away in October, but you can enter to win at WGNRadio.com.
Someone would call me out on that.
Thank you for a second.
Thank you for the fact-checking, because otherwise someone would be like, he said one truck a day. So that works out. Thanks, Dave. You saved us.
You bet.
One truck in October, right? Something like that in the fall?
In October, yes. One.
All right.
The Centennial Blue truck that I drove.
Our text question today at 312-981-7200 is what song, if in a fantastical world, if we lived in a dystopian future where U.S. soccer meant something, and they actually made it to the World Cup, and they lost in the what would amount to the Final Four, and the crowd serenaded the team as the English fans did yesterday. They serenaded their losing team with Oasis' "Don't Look Back in Anger." What would the American song be that we would all collectively sing together to soothe the pain of the American squad? I got some right. "Party in the USA." Not a bad choice, right? Not a bad choice. I've got "Born in the USA." We've got Lee Greenwood, of course, 630, saying "Proud to be an American." Queen, "We Are the Champions," 815. 312 says "So Long, It's Been Good to Know You." Okay. 217, "Bye Bye Miss American Pie." That could work. That could be good. Everyone knows that one, right?
I'm just thinking Taylor Swift's "We Are Never Getting Back Together." That would be a good one.
Taylor Swift is a crossover. Everybody gets it.
Yeah, how can you do "We Are the Champions" when you just got beat? Yeah.
Right. How about "You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings"?
Yeah, I would love to see that be sang in unison at a stadium. 630, "Loser" by Beck. And there's a couple of different iterations of that concept. "Who Let the Dogs Out?" 815.
So why?
A lot of good. "Sweet Caroline," I think, is a front runner. "America" by Neil Diamond, of course. But "Sweet Caroline," everyone knows "Sweet Caroline," and that seems to be a very American thing, even though it's Irish, right?
What about Closing Time by Semisonic?
There you go.
Oh, there you go.
That's a good one. Hulk Hogan's theme song, Real American. Everybody, one, two, three. Yeah, that would not work for the unison serenade, of course.
Eric Adelstein's in studio, and he just gave you a head shake. Like, that's not going to go.
I don't know the lyrics.
Yeah,
that's I was going to jump in, but I.
Oh, there you go.
That's good.
Yeah, that's a British band, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, you too, you could do Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, but you can't do an Irish or a British band.
Yeah, you can't do a foreign entity. Right.
It's
got to
be like
American.
Dylan or Greenwood or like.
Like Bon Jovi, Living on a Prayer. Yeah.
Springsteen or something.
You Give Love a Bad Name. Born to Be Baby.
Dylan has a song, It's Not Dark Yet, but it's getting there. Too dark?
You'd have to rehearse that with 15,000 people before you do it. That's the problem.
Yeah.
All right, so it is the coming up, we're going to talk Eric Adelstein's here, of course, and we're going to talk Democratic politics, because there's a lot going on to discuss, of course, and a little bit about campaign ads. We just talked with Rick Pearson as well. But you know what? It is 720, so we do have the most valuable person on the planet.
The MVPP.
The MVPP for Thursday, July 12th. Get this. This is great. Sridhar Chalal from Pune, India is our most valuable person on the planet. Why? Because on Wednesday, yesterday, he held, up to this point, he had held the Guinness Book of World Records for longest fingernails ever recorded. We all know that picture. And yesterday, there was a big celebration at the Ripley's Believe It or Not Museum in Times Square. They used power tools to cut his fingernails. It's over.
Oh, God.
Power tools?
Like, he's been growing. The 82-year-old has been growing the nails on his left hand since he was 14, 1952.
Wait, this is the same guy?
It's the same. It must
be,
yeah.
In the book?
Yeah, I think so. Like the World Book would, or the Guinness Book would always have that picture.
Yeah.
That's what Eric said. It used to creep you out as a kid.
As a kid, we'd see that picture.
Yeah, I think it. I mean,
you'd have friends that would be like, hey, you got to look at this.
Yeah, right. Maybe it was an uncle. Maybe
they were
all
curly.
Thing. Listen to this. His nails had a combined length of 29 feet, 10 inches.
What?
Which is about the same length as a bus. And his longest nail was on his thumb.
I can see that. The thumb is the strongest nail on my hand, I know. So
probably didn't do much texting.
No.
Maybe that's why he got him. He's like, there's all this technology. I just really can't. This is what did it.
So I assume he's right-handed.
Probably. A technician wearing a face mask and a power tool. Did the nail clipping ceremony.
Well, and they said he was in a lot of pain from the nails.
So now maybe...
So maybe he could have cut him sooner.
Painless life. Maybe he had to line up the power tools.
If he was on an airplane, you'd have to get a second seat for that hand, you know, for those nails.
Emotional support
29
nails.
29 feet.
Right. Well, the most valuable person on the planet today, Sridhar Chalal from Pune, India. Congratulations for entertaining us for years and, of course, for being free of all those nails. Blackhawks convention coming up here on the 27th through the 29th. We've got a family pack of four passes to that convention at the Hilton Chicago. Get your convention pass and hotel guest rooms today. Book online at chicagoblackhawks.com. 312-981-7200. Dave, I'll let you do the honors. What number will the winners get? What number call it?
My math is going to be simpler.
Okay.
They inaugurated in the new Chicago Pro Hockey League last night.
Yes.
There are some Blackhawks who are playing in that. They play at the MBI Arena, and Alex DeBrincat had a hat trick in his first game of the Chicago Pro Hockey League. So let's go with caller 12 for number 12.
There you go.
Alex DeBrincat.
DeBrincat, number 12, the 12th caller, 312-981-7200.
Dave's math actually made sense there,
that made
whereas
sense.
Your
fun.
Math never does.
Well, I do more old math. It's the long form math. It's the kind that we grew up on.
Carry the two?
Yeah, the carry the two style. Mm-hmm. Show your work kind of stuff. This new Obama math.
You mean straightforward?
Yes.
Like plus and minus?
Right. Who needs that, right?
Right.
All right, coming up, Eric Adelstein will continue our conversation about politics here on this Thursday.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
740 here on 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman in. Steve's out today. Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Joanne Jeanette, Steve Grzanich, and Eric Adelstein. Eric is here in studio, as he is every Thursday, to talk politics. Pat Brady out today. But we will catch up with him
finally
next
got
week.
Rid of Brady.
Finally got rid of Brady. Before we get into it, you were really affected by that nail. The most valuable person on the planet.
I was.
You seemed to have a personal connection.
Well,
to that
I
story.
Did, you know, not to in the category of too much information, but as lots of little kids don't like to have their, particularly their toenails cut, right. My mother would scare me, and say, I don't know where she came up with this, but she would say, there was this Prince Philip who never cut his nails. I don't know why he had to be a prince, but I guess he did. And they grew underneath, and he wasn't able to walk after a while. So right. She'd be like, you like to play baseball, you like to run around, you don't cut those nails, you can end up like Prince Philip and not be able to run.
Is that the Prince Philip?
No, it was some random, I don't think it was a real Prince Philip, but I don't know why or how she came up with it, so I'm going to have to ask her again. But
good to know.
Yeah, so that stirred up a lot of memories, Justin. Thanks right. for doing
well,
that.
Well, hey, that's what we do here at the Most Valuable Person on the Planet. We talked with Rick Pearson coming up or in the earlier part of the hour about the controversy this morning, the Rauner campaign coming out and saying that the latest attack ad from J.B. Pritzker was dishonest and misleading. And this is the story about separations of families. You know, and the last question we asked, Rick, and I'll ask you this as well, do we expect a certain level of factual accuracy when it comes right. to attack ads?
Well, here's what's happened. As you guys know, the decline of good political reporting and newspapers and news outlets. You know, you used to have a Rick Pearson times 10 in the Chicago media. So you had referees, in a sense, on these campaigns. So if you came out with ads that weren't factually correct or had uncredibility, you be under fire. People were reading newspapers, people were watching news coverage, and so you couldn't really get away with it. Now what we've moved into this, you can kind of say anything you want as long as it passes a bit of the authenticity test. And that's what's scary. And again, putting aside Democrat or Republican, we have two self-funding billionaires who basically have their own broadcast networks
right.
and can pretty much say whatever they want. And the only judge are the voters. Now, voters are good judges, but journalism, political journalism, in
used
a sense,
to be the referee, right?
Was the referee. And when you have less people reading editorials and reading columnists and reading news and the decline of newspapers, now you can get away with a lot more than you could 10 years ago.
These self-funded teams that are working on these campaigns for each candidate, how big is that team? What does that look like?
I don't know exactly. I think they probably have, you know, 50, 60 employees. But then you've got the consultant teams that are doing the polling and the focus groups and making the ads and doing the direct mail. And, you know, these are big time operations.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're talking about $100 million campaign or more, you know, that's a mid-sized business.
And people forget that when they say this is going to be the most expensive campaign in Illinois history. That's really what we're talking about. The staff and how much money goes into the actual personnel that is put together to run a campaign. It is almost like a mid-sized business.
That's right. And the other thing is interesting on the ads. You know, you sort of you have two choices in an election like this if you're the Pritzker campaign. One is, do you just say, we have to get out the Democratic base. They're energized. This is a blue state. If we get them out, we can get them. We don't really need to persuade a lot of people. So you may have a little bit hotter rhetoric because you're trying to fire up the anti-Rauners versus those swing voters who might be like, well, I kind of liked Rauner last time. I don't really know. So the choice in these elections is always, are you heating it up? Or are you trying to really play for the middle? And sometimes it's hard to do both.
You know, this cycle, and it may not just be this one. This might be more current. It seems because they have unlimited resources and they can do whatever they want to do, that they're almost acting like newspapers. They're able to come out with an issue right on separation of families. Here's the issue about Rauner didn't do enough, or he's invested in a company. On another story, it'll be Pritzker didn't do this. But it almost has this immediacy like a news story.
That's right. And what you have in the staffs of these campaigns, you have the outside TV guys like what we do on our campaigns, but then you have an internal team for digital that are churning out these little pieces. So a story hits, they're cutting a piece, putting it out as if, and a lot of times, and I'm critical sometimes of the news, and I've taken advantage of this, is the news covers it like a new TV ad from the Runner campaign. You're like, well, there's no money behind it. All they did was have some kid overnight cut a video that said, J.B. Pritzker's horrible and all this kind of stuff and the news of the day, and then they cover it like it's a TV ad, but there's no real money behind it. And I've always been sort of warned our campaigns to be like, you got to push back on these reporters and say, this isn't a TV ad. This is a news hook or their own sort of news story that they're trying to put out and affect the news cycle.
It's amazing to me how much this has changed, because it doesn't motivate the candidates to get out and press the flesh. It doesn't motivate them to do debates to actually cause news, to have people cover them. They can essentially do all they need to do by just putting out ads every single day on whatever right. news issues out there.
Now, here's the counter argument, and this is interesting too, because of the way the, as we know, the communications and entertainment industry is changing. The broadcast television still remains very dominant, and broadcast radio, but you're skewing older. Right. And so when you're starting to try to reach voters under 50 or under 40, where they're doing a lot of time shifted television, they're watching Netflix, they're watching Hulu and YouTube and all that kind of stuff, it's harder and harder to reach those younger and younger voters. So politics, like all communications and entertainment, is going to change over the next 10 years, because as this generation gets older, their viewing habits are much, much different than sort of current voters.
And that's where those digital overnight, the guy that cuts it and just puts it out as a little response thing that isn't actually paid ad, a younger person only sees that,
right?
Not the commercial.
I can't tell you how many campaigns I've been in where, I didn't mean to cut you off, where they say, we need a viral video. Can you make a viral video? That's like sitting in, you know, in a studio hit, but right. I need a mega hit. Can you make a mega hit today? You know? So.
Well, it is an interesting moment for politics, especially how they do their campaigning, because so much money is going in and we're seeing all this money go in, but there is this disconnect in the way that you put out these ads and they run, and it might be a funny ad, but it might be playing Blagojevich tapes. It might be making this argument about separations of families.
Right.
And I don't know. I mean, how do you measure whether or not it hits?
Well, you measure by doing survey research, you know, before and after, and seeing, you know, the response and where voters are moving. But again, that tool has become a bit flawed too, just the way people deal with cell phones versus landlines and all that kind of stuff. So the whole sort of paradigm is shifting in the same way that, you know, television shows and movies and every other entertainment and communications medium is changing, and no one's quite figured out the new paradigm yet.
There, because of my job, and I book a lot of things for this show, I get a lot of phone calls from numbers I don't know, so I actually answer those. And I've been getting a ton of polling phone calls asking if I can talk about whatever. But then by the third question, when they ask my line of work, I'm disqualified because I work in the media. So they really step those up.
Think about this for a second. The polling, and I know the viewers on the show pay attention to this stuff, so this is a little bit into the weeds. But most survey research is done by calling landlines for the most part. Well, think about the difference. When someone calls a landline to my mother's house, for example, it's like a guest has arrived at home. She'll get up from dinner. She'll answer the phone. She'll talk to them. That was sort of a 1970s, 1980s, the way you treated that phone. It was a guest. Today, it's an enemy, right? When the phone rings, it's like, who's that? I don't want to talk to them. What's caller ID? So
ours comes across the TV, and it's like, oh, my sister's calling again.
Right, right.
Yeah. It may change the disposition of the people who are
Well, think about
polled.
This, Justin. Right. It used to be you could say with certainty the fraction of people that you reach in the survey were representative of everybody else. But now you could say, well, those people are different who are willing to pick up the phone and have a 20-minute conversation with a pollster.
Right.
They may not represent everybody
else. As we saw famously in the 2016 election
That's
with
right.
President Trump. Eric Edelstein here with Talking Politics on the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. This is for you, Eric. This is a Prince Philip. I'm so happy. This is... Yeah, he cut his nails.
Yeah,
right. 720 WGN, Steve Cochran Show, Justin Kaufman in. Mary's here. Dave, Steve, Joanne Jeanette's in for Mary Vanderbilt. All right, let's keep going with Eric Edelstein here. We're talking about campaigns and how they're using mostly digital and television ads in this new cycle. And I've noticed this a lot with the incumbent. The governor seems to avoid, this has been a news story, he seems to avoid talking about Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And in this way that when he does finally step up and say something one way or the other, the opposition pounces. They use it in Facebook ads. They use it whatever which way to align him. As we get further and further into this new world order where data is king, are we going to see the effect of these negative, the ability to pull one word out and know that that word is negative and be able to use it against you? Is this going to make politicians say nothing?
Well, yeah. I mean, again, you have this sort of perfect storm of the referees have less and less influence. The amount of data and video that's out there, right? Everybody's walking around with a camera. So a politician, particularly a prominent one, a governor, or candidate for governor, there's no hiding. You know, I don't care if you're at the smallest county in Illinois and you happen to say something, or as Mitt Romney learned at a fundraising thing where he, made the comment, the infamous comment in 2012 about 47 million, or Hillary Clinton
with the deplorable,
about the deplorables. There's no hiding. So, yes, you end up with very risk-averse candidates. In fact, it's one of the reasons people like Trump. Because he was able to say whatever came to his mind and get away with
it. Does he give cover? I mean, can he inspire a new generation of politicians who don't care about what they say?
That's a great question. And you've seen some copycats who've tried to do this. We'll see in the 2018 midterms whether anybody can get away with it other than Trump.
Who's governing the elections that you said the referees, there's fewer and fewer of those. But is there a general ethics type board
there's not. What there are a few outlets, PolitiFact and a few newspapers that do fact checks on ads. And what happens is now you end up the other side. If you get a Pinocchio or you get a untrue, then the other side takes that and says they're lying about my record and PolitiFact said it. So you have a little bit of that, but not as much as you used to.
And the thing about it, I think, for all voters is as you try to understand who you want to vote for. In this case, you have two self-financed billionaires who are running against each other, and by all accounts, personally, are well liked. They're investors. They give to charity, donate. They both are well liked in their circles. Yet it seems like the game here is to sell that they're not.
Well, a lot of human decisions get made on likability, on character, on values. It's not just about issues and ideology. And so it's your attachment, not just to a party, but to a person. And I think why you see a lot of times in political ads, the positive and the negative of that, where you're trying to talk about their family or talk about a humorous side to them or something you might not know, and then the other side trying to say, oh no, they're a horrible person. So, it's sort of how human behavior is. I think the one thing, though, we sort of talked down about how horrible it all is. I do think I may be in the minority, but I think there's a sophistication among voters that others don't necessarily agree with, that they know BS when they see it.
Right.
They understand authenticity. We're all connoisseurs of video, of television ads, of television content, of digital content. We know what's true and what's not. So I think sometimes these over-the-top ads don't really work, and it is the ones that are more authentic and true to what people actually believe that have a bigger impact.
Well, it'll be interesting to see. I know they're spending the most money ever on this campaign or this race, but Bloomberg had an article last week about how more people are avoiding news than ever or information. So they're spending more, but if less people are even taking it in, what's going to be that impact?
Well, that's why it affects you. It's sort of an arms race. You have to spend more to reach these people, because it used to be, okay, everyone's watching five networks, right, and maybe a few cable stations. Now your audience is so diffuse that you're chasing them. So people are heading for the exits. I don't want to hear about Trump. I don't want to hear about politics.
Right.
Well, now as a marketer, as an advertiser, I got to go find those people. So as you're running away from the information I'm trying to give you, I'm chasing you down.
Right? You're going
to
be on my Waze app.
Exactly.
I'm going to be looking for traffic, and I'm going to have a Pritzker and a Rauner ad.
You're watching the finale of Handmaid's Tale and on Hulu, and stops, and it's Pritzker.
That's kind of a buzzkill, isn't it? I mean, no offense to JB, but any politician at that point.
Like. Real quick, as we wrap up, let's talk about the Democrats. There's been so much made this week about what they're going to do with the Supreme Court nominee. Many will come out, critics, and will say this is one of those fights you probably should step aside because it could cause more harm than good. What do you think about the Democrats and their opposition to Brett Kavanaugh, the Supreme Court nominee?
Well, there's a cross current, and it's very tricky to navigate, which is the base wants a fight. You know, your more left kind of anti-Trump group says anything Trump does is bad, is wrong. We expect leaders to oppose it. And you have kind of a calcifying older Democratic leadership that now needs to be responsive to this base. And so it's sort of a knee-jerk, we're opposed to anything. But then you have this sort of middle voter, persuadable voter, who says, can't these guys just get along, Democrats and Republicans? We're tired of the fight. Why does everything have to be a battle? You know, it's like, oh, if the Democrats are for it, Republicans are against it, and vice versa. Yeah. And they want something to get done. So you have these cross currents hitting each other, and it's very tricky. I think the calculus right now is, given that the wind is more at the Democrats' back, playing to the base is a better opportunity. I think these hearings, though, are going to be interesting. And there's a story yesterday about his massive credit card debt, that he was buying Nationals tickets and, you know, racked up like $200,000 of credit card debt on a guy that makes, you know, a public servant salary. And, you know, again, people run up debt and all that kind of stuff. Right. But then it got paid off. And it's sort of a question of where the money came from.
And the other calculus, obviously, the Democrats are really playing up the Roe v. Wade angle, and that this could spell the end of one of the most contentious Supreme Court decisions in American history.
Yeah, I mean,
is that rattling the saber, or is that accurate?
I think it's accurate. My concern is we cry wolf on everything, and so when there really is a threat to something, people don't necessarily take it seriously. This is a serious threat. They will undo Roe versus Wade if they can on this court, and what that means is it'll be up to every state as to what availabilities women's healthcare services will be. And, you know, you're going to have a very balkanized country where there's going to be places where women will not have the opportunity to make choices about their own body, about their own pregnancies, and you'll have states where they will. And then you're going to end up in more of a financial situation. Oh, women of wealth, they can fly around, they can move around and get those choices, and women who don't have those opportunities are going to be much more restricted.
And I love how that's the big topic. Why is that the one of all the things that could be undone? Like, people have to move on from that.
That's the issue. I mean, it stood for,
it's maddening.
Wasn't it the anniversary this year? Those 40 years?
Yeah.
So it's, yeah. I didn't know much about it, and I will talk much, much more about this issue. I didn't know much about how controversial the actual opinion was. It's controversial as a law and how it works, but what the judge or the justices at that time did, and how some purists are like, that was not what the Supreme Court supposed to do.
Right to privacy.
Yeah. And just this stuff. Idea of legislating from the court.
Yeah.
It's an interesting debate, legal debate, if not also one for the country. Eric Edelstein joins us on Thursdays for Politics. Great to see you. Thanks for coming in, man.
Thanks for having me.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than when I should.
Dave Cockett Show here, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman, Dean Richards joins us on the line from our, what do you call it, our satellite sister television empire.
I call it the mothership.
The mothership. That's a good way to say it. Hey, Dean, how are you?
I'm very well. Where's Steve today?
Steve is golfing. He's trying to break the record of 723 holes of golf in one day.
Oh, he's up. Say from 650.
Yeah. Now it's 720. He's moved it up. He's texting back and forth. He's having a great morning. So
wish I could take the day off just to go golf.
Well, you know. You got that you get vacation for, right?
I'm going to take the day off. I want to play Scrabble.
He's got he played all yesterday as part of the start to
part
that
of X-more. The senior
the
players
Pro-Am.
Championship
yeah.
and then the Pro Am. But Dean, you kind of said that with a lack of respect for the game of golf.
No, really, more lack of respect for Steve.
So you got to place the lack of respect somewhere.
You know, some of us have more of a commitment to the responsibility that we bear.
Wow.
To be here every day for our listeners. The people depend on us.
Got it.
For, you know, we're responsible. This is like a 7-Eleven, really, right. Minus the smocks.
And the
we are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. How would you like it if you went to the 7-Eleven and they were closed because the guy behind the counter is golfing?
No, but in this case, there are, you know, the guy behind the counter's cousin, Justin. He gets to sit in, and the 7-Eleven stays open.
Okay.
You're Steve's cousin?
I'm just saying. The guy, I'm like, I know how to roll the hot dogs. I can make the churros and get them ready for
roll
you.
Roll the hot dogs.
You know, yesterday was the free Slurpee day, and my girlfriend that lives in Florida, she has six-year-old twins, and they went to go get their free Slurpee, and the Slurpee machine was down.
Ooh.
That happened to Miles told me, I was yesterday talking about, that's one of the camp things that they do on this day. They're like, today we'll do softball, we'll play kickball, and then we're going to 7-Eleven for the free Slurpee.
You know why that Slurpee machine was empty?
Yeah.
Someone was out golfing.
Yeah. Well, that's what I go, how was the free Slurpee? He's like, yeah, it's okay. The machine was broke.
Yeah.
And I'm like, really?
Yeah,
really, 7-Eleven?
No Slurpees today. The guy's out golfing.
Yeah.
Wonder if they gave out rain checks.
In his little 7-Eleven smock. Did I read correctly that Steve had never had a Slurpee until yesterday?
Yes. Yeah.
And so he tried it on the air.
And never have a Slurpee.
I don't know. And he likes fountain drinks.
It's a charmed life.
Yeah.
I'm not a Slurpee guy.
There's a video of him tasting it for the first time at WGNradio.com.
Yeah. I love a good Slurpee. I like the consistency, the freezy, slushy. I don't know what you call it.
Yeah. Slurpee.
I enjoy that. Mm-hmm.
He also confessed to enjoying hot dogs with ketchup. And I noticed on the expressway this morning in the LED messages. Did you see this?
I did. Yeah.
No speeding, no texting, no ketchup.
No ketchup.
So I don't know if Steve prompted that from IDOT, but
I probably did. They're listening. They're like, what am I going to put on the messages on the expressway today?
I used to like ketchup on my hot dogs, but then I got older than 5 years old.
Right.
Emmy nominations. When did they come out today? Don't they try to do this early? Oh, they do it early. Okay.
This is the first time they've done this because the poor celebrities don't want to have to get up early to find out they're being honored. So they normally they do it. Usually it's about 7:30 Chicago time for the Oscars, for all the nominations for the big awards. And, you know, in California, it's 5:30. It is early. I get that. But you know, it's a big country. They're doing it at 10:30 this morning. And some of the sure bets to get nominations today. If the TV show Atlanta doesn't get the lion's share of comedy nominations, I'll eat this piece of paper that I'm reading off of, pretending to make it sound spontaneous right now. But so that should get nominated. Curb Your Enthusiasm is back up for nomination again this year. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Has anybody seen that show? I have not.
My wife watches it and loves it.
Yeah, people that see it completely love it. Blackish, Silicon Valley, Will and Grace probably will be up for nominations today, both the show and its actors. I'm really curious to see if there'll be any nominations for the Roseanne show, for Roseanne, for anything Roseanne related, or whether the people who make the nominations, determine the nominations, will completely ignore certainly the most talked about TV show of the year. For best comedy performances, definitely Donald Glover from Atlanta, definitely Bill Hader for his new show on HBO, Barry. Larry David for Career, Eric McCormack will certainly be nominated. Anthony Anderson, William H. Macy, Tracy Ellis Ross from Blackish, and Allison Janney from Mom. Lily Tomlin, Deborah Messing will all be nominated. On the dramatic side, just the same way I think Atlanta is going to get the most nominations, I think that The Handmaid's Tale for Best Dramas of the Year will get a boatload of nominations, as will Game of Thrones. It wasn't eligible this year, but last year, rather, but it is this year, so I think it's going to come back in a big way. Stranger Things, The Crown, The Americans, Westworld, This Is Us, all will get tons of nominations, and the actors from those shows as well will all get nomination. So, you know, we'll see at 10:30 what gets in and what does not get in. The actual Emmy Awards aren't going to be until September.
Yeah, so some time to argue back and forth.
Little ways to, you know, for all the politics to start taking place. And what I will also find very interesting when the nominations come out this morning is how few actual broadcast network nominations there will be.
Mm.
Used to be that cable dominated it. HBO still holds the record of being the most nominated network. Now, for the past 17 years, it's the most nominated network. But it's been moving more and more and more toward online platforms like Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu and all the rest, not even cable TV
shows.
It'll
be interesting to see.
It'll be interesting to see if this is the first year that they take the lion's share of nominations.
Well, we got some other news. Kylie Jenner, of course, the Forbes billionaire issue.
Our
Cardi
favorite.
B.
Yep.
Yeah, and a celebrity real estate. As
yep.
well.
We'll be calling his name.
Dean Richards is here. We're talking Emmy nominations. It's coming out pretty soon. What do you watch, Mary? What do you hope is nominated?
Is Billions going to get any nominations?
I don't know that show that well.
Dean?
It could. I don't think it's going to be a significant amount of nominations.
Is there Emmy strategy? You said that Game of Thrones last year wasn't eligible. Do they time that so that they can have a year off so they can come back strong?
No, I just think that the production deadline, because they broke down, you know, the final season of Game of Thrones got broken down into two years because they stretched it out, and I think the timing just didn't work out with Emmy deadlines. I don't think it was anything strategic, but on the dramatic side, it's going to whoever gets the most. We're just talking about nominations today, not wins, but I think the most nominations for dramas are going to go to Game of Thrones and The Handmaid's Tale. So, you know, which of those two, you know, is Game of Thrones, they are a very honored show. Is it, you know, running out of gas and Handmaid's Tale is going to mm-hmm. succeed? People are saying that Handmaid's Tale may be running out of gas. Don't know. I'm just not sure. What I do find really interesting, though, because of the same thing with the timing for qualification for this, Veep is not eligible for anything this year.
Interesting, yeah.
Which has, perennially won Best Comedy. This will be the first year that Julia Louis-Dreyfus will not be up for Best Actress since 2011.
Wow. There's so many great shows and performances now because there's the golden age of television. There's streaming sites and what have you. But I'd like to see Marc Maron from Glow. I think that show, he has turned into, every time he's on screen, I find myself laughing.
Yeah.
And I hope that he gets a nod. I'd probably be his first. And then I always feel, I don't understand it, but Neil Patrick Harris plays Count Olaf in the show Series of Unfortunate Events, which is on Netflix. And he does it in such a tremendous way where he's a villain that plays different characters. The show is extremely popular. He got snubbed last year. Is it looking like he's going to get snubbed again?
I think he will, yeah.
I don't understand that.
You know, because there's only so many nominations. And, you know, I was talking about this on TV this morning. There is so much that's on conventional broadcast television now, cable, and now the online platforms. I don't know how anybody could keep track of all of this. And, you know, just making determinations for nominations. There is no way that anybody could be watching all of these shows to make an accurate determination of what should be eligible for nomination and what isn't.
That's one of Nick DiGilio's big complaints right now. There's too much TV to watch, you know, traditional and non-traditional.
Yeah, there is a lot. I mean, it's great that there's so much variety, but presuming that the nominations are determined by people who are in the Television Academy in their various areas of expertise, there's no way they could be watching all of the shows that are eligible for nomination. No way that it could be happening.
Do they have a special category for the Chicago shows for Chicago Med and Chicago PD?
They should. I've been campaigning for that there should be one just for all the Chicago shows. But also, I think after all these years, I should get some sort of you know, like career achievement for my Victory Auto Records commercial.
No question.
That I did back in 1991.
Yep.
Show me another commercial that's been on the air that long. Me and the guy who, when he opens the door of the car, it falls off on him. We both should get some sort of
at least in
career achievement something.
Yeah, right, right, right. Big part of the broadcast.
That old car may be worth money. And the crowd in the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion goes crazy.
Yeah, right.
Woo!
All right, let's get to some other celebrity news. Cardi B has a baby. What?
She does. Well, you know, she secretly got married to rapper Offset.
Mm-hmm. I knew that, yeah.
Did you?
I did know. Cardi B is one of those... I do not like Cardi B. I'm not a Cardi B fan. I don't like that style. But when we... I'll tell you this. When we were at the parade, at the Gay Pride Parade, DJ Cash Era was our DJ, and she played Cardi B, and watching the people... You know, nine rows deep on either side, sing along with the song.
That's right.
Was tremendous. I was like, well, she's very popular.
She is very, very popular. As is Offset. They had a little baby girl that they named Culture, and this is her first baby. This is his fourth.
Culture.
And they went with the Kardashian spelling, started
right,
with a K.
With a K. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I think it's Culture. Culture Kiara, I believe is.
I think you're correct.
Short, first and middle name.
When they shorten the name, it would be Kulch.
Kulch.
Or maybe just Kulch. KK.
Dinner time, Kulch. Okay. All right. And then let's do celebrity real estate.
We have a good one.
Yeah, what do you have today? I know that you dabble in real estate.
It's more than dabble. I spend just as much time now with my real estate career as I do with my broadcast career. But... I've listed many houses. This one I may be most excited about. This one is the home that Zsa Zsa Gabor lived in from 1974 up until when she passed away a couple of years ago. This home was once owned by Elvis Presley.
Oh. Ooh.
And people who have been to this home for various parties include the Beatles, Queen Elizabeth, Ronald Reagan, Elizabeth Taylor, Frank Sinatra, who else? Katharine Hepburn, Ava Gardner was a visitor at this house. Oh, because before Zsa Zsa owned it, Howard Hughes owned it. So, you know, there's probably...
there's something going on there.
Like jars of fingernails, hidden or someplace, or all the crazy things that he did. But this is a beautiful 24,000 square foot two-story home. It's got a 4,100 square foot garage. The garage is bigger than my house. I love that.
That's bigger than my house as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's got... kitchen, family room, living room, dining room, of course. There's a bar, screening room, gym, steam room, 7 bedrooms, 10 baths. And it is on the market right now for $23.4 million. Yeah.
So 7 bedrooms. If you do the math on the square footage, I would think there should be like 19 bedrooms
right,
based on 24,000 square feet. They must be giant rooms.
Well, the bedrooms are probably...
Probably bigger than my house.
I haven't done a walkthrough myself on this yet.
Okay.
But, you know, there's plenty of other house there besides, you know, just the bedrooms.
Granite things. Countertops? We're talking granite?
Well, there might be formica. Zsa Zsa, I know, was a big fan of the formica.
As a matter of fact, it steps to transportation.
That's right near
walkability.
Right near the L. Right. Walk to the L, which is interesting because it's not even in Chicago.
Right.
Well, how about the history of this house, though? Howard Hughes, Elvis, and Zsa Zsa Gabor.
I would assume that's why people would want to buy that house.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, I don't have any money on me.
I'm in for $11, Dean.
I have $13.
Yeah, so that's 24. We're almost there.
Yeah, I'm not even going to put in a bid on this one for you guys on this time.
Man.
Yeah. I don't want to disrespect the legacy of this house. I have one other item real quick, proving my theory that there are zero new ideas in Hollywood. They're going to remake RoboCop again.
Again? They just did it.
They just did it a few years ago, and it really sort of bombed. But they announced this morning that they're going to try one more time with RoboCop. They don't have any casting or release date information yet. But
is it a different group that's going to retry this?
It is a different group that's retrying it. And the director, forget his name, the director who very skillfully gave us the movie District 9, he's going to be directing this movie. So I'm not 100% sure, you know, if it's going to be... you know, RoboCop from Detroit again, you know, following the old Peter Weller, 1987. I was shocked when I looked that up this morning when I saw there's a new RoboCop. I can't believe that the original was that many years ago now.
Oh, my gosh. Well, your prayers have been answered, America. RoboCop 3,
thank
the third reboot.
It'll be out maybe a week or two before Jumanji 12.
All right, right. Dean Richards joins us every day, 8 o'clock. Thanks, Dean.
See you guys.
All right, there you go. A RoboCop, breaking a little news, RoboCop reboot again. All right. Coming up, Swap Meet, Greg Flam is here in the building. If you got something you want to be evaluated, like a collectible, like a signed Michael Jordan copy of a... ashtray.
anything Michael Jordan related.
Anything Michael Jordan related. That's usually where we end up. 312-981-7200. Greg is in the building, and we'll get to it right after the news. It is Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in for Steve today. Dave Ennett's here, Mary Sandberg. Steve Grzanich, Joanne Jeanette, and also Greg Flam at DuPage Picker. He's in the building. He, of course, is the man who brings us the Swap Meet, our segment where we evaluate your collectibles, your memorabilia, your junk. What you might throw away might actually be worth something. Am I not right, Mr. Flam?
Yes, thanks for having me. It's always the thing you think is not worth anything.
Right.
That's why, you know, I tell people price everything before you throw it away, or don't throw it away. Just let people pick over it and see what they want.
We've done this segment for a couple of years now, Mary, and I've learned so much about picking, but also just about all the junk that's been acquired by Chicagoans. Like I'm in love with this city even more, and because of the people saying I've got Rostenkowski's cufflinks.
Right.
How did you get those? Awesome. 312-981-7200. Swap Meet, of course, sponsored by Wolf's Flea Market. And we're going to talk about that as well.
Yep.
You're out there, and we're going out there this Sunday.
That's awesome.
To do a little bit of Facebook Live and also to record some stuff. So we're going to be out to Flea Market at the Allstate Arena.
So are you going to be out there to sell or buy?
No, I'm out there to have a throne. And then people come up to me and Greg, and they say, I've got this. And I go, this is really great. That's what I'm going to do.
Yeah, we haven't worked that out, but maybe you can grab a few boxes of leftovers here or old swag, and we can sell it out there.
We might have some stuff.
I'm sure his wife would be happy to unload some of Justin's things.
Yeah, exactly. All right, let's start us off. 312-981-7200. Why don't we start right now with Craig? Craig from Plainfield. Craig, what do you want to brag about this morning?
Hi, I have a Donruss rookie Frank Thomas baseball card that he just recently signed. So I wasn't sure if that would be worth anything with an older signature after he retired. Or
can you even tell in that?
Sometimes they'll put HOF for Hall of Fame after their name, so you can date it that way. So that's one way of telling.
Does he do that? Did he put HOF on it?
He signed a baseball where he put HOS on the rookie card. He just signed his name.
He's still getting used to it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Where'd you get it? I mean, was it the kind of thing where you...
It was at the Sox Fest.
Okay. Oh, nice. At Sox Fest. That's smart. All right. Thanks, Craig. What do you like there?
I'm putting it at the 75 to start range, and it might go up in an auction. It all depends on which day. You know, they fluctuate quite a bit between 50 and 75 fluctuation.
Now, that's not an ego thing, right? That's not when they put HOF on there. That's not I'm so famous, I'm going to put HOF for Hall of Fame. That has to do with memorabilia and signing and things like that, so they know when the signature was dated.
Yeah, they...
That's crazy.
You know, you can at least get the before and after, you know, HOF. So, you know, at least with the HOF, you kind of know what year or what years it was signed. If it doesn't have that, your guess is anything unless you get it authenticated.
Well, I would assume I would be like, this is when Frank Thomas hit that one home run, then he signed it.
Like a rookie card. Like, if you got it signed early on, it's probably worth more than getting a rookie card signed now or right before the Hall of Fame.
Do they actually bring in forensics to test ink?
I guess these graders or authenticators know what they're doing. They charge like $14 a card or $14 an item, and
really?
You send it in, and they seal it. And if you break the seal, it's, you know, yeah. it's start all over again.
So that grocery store bag full of baseball cards that I have that are all getting musty in mm-hmm. my parents' pole barn. Those aren't worth anything?
especially the ones that have creases from your bicycle spokes, right?
Let's go to Ken. Ken, what do you want to brag about, Ken?
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Great show. It's great to hear it in the morning.
Awesome. Thank you.
I've got a Brian Urlacher signed rookie jersey, and it's mounted and boxed in a custom wooden frame with glass over it and everything. I'm just wondering what it's worth.
Yeah, that's good. Urlacher stuff is going to obviously have a different. I think it's going to have a different appeal in a month or so when he gets inducted to the Hall of Fame. Right?
I wasn't sure if he was calling in for a swap meet or Chicago accent challenge.
A lot of elongated vowels. We're learning about right. the Chicago accent, but the Urlacher stuff. I mean, obviously, being inducted into the Hall of Fame is going to change the value of an Urlacher jersey.
It should. I'm seeing here people already listing it with the HOF, you know, by the jersey. So,
oh, he's already doing it?
Well, there's people selling it that way. They're always, you know, already right. putting the HOF on it. His jersey has gone upwards of $2,000. You know, I see some as low as $160 signed. That's signed.
Signed.
So that's a big fluctuation.
Oh, who was it? Someone called in one of the swap meets talking about Urlacher coming into the restaurant in Wheeling. Remember that? Urlacher came in, and the story was that they were about to close up whatever restaurant they were, and someone came in needing takeout, a bunch of takeout, and they're like, it was after hours.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It turned out to be Urlacher, and
they
and
stayed
Urlacher
open
signed,
late. Yeah.
And they stayed open late. Yeah. You know, the pluses of being a football star.
I right. bet it was Bob Chins. He seems like he'd want to take out Bob Chins.
But does Bob Chins ever close?
Yeah, that's a good point on that.
Right? Let's keep going. We got a lot of sports stuff. Let's go to Tim. Tim's in Elk Grove Village. Tim, what do you want to brag about?
I have a Chris Chelios wooden custom Sherwood signed hockey stick.
Oh, wow. Oh, where'd you get it?
A fantasy camp about 25 years ago, or 20 years ago.
Oh, wow. I was hoping that you got it at Chelly's Chili Bar. Like he had left the stick because he went to get some more chili and then you took it. That was what I was hoping.
Could be some chili juice on it, but...
Yeah, a little stick.
What do you think about a Chelly hockey stick?
The only one that came up was a best offer accepted, and they were asking 100, so it went for less than that.
So less than 100 bucks.
So 70, maybe 60.
All right, that's not bad. Yeah. I mean, you got it for, I don't know what you got it for.
Yeah, it kind of peaked, I think, you know, the popularity, so I think it would have sold for more years ago than now.
If you asked me, Chris Chelios is still peaking at popularity.
I feel like with all the throwback, when the Hawks were winning all the Stanley Cups and everything that went into that, Chelly got overlooked. I mean, it was mm-hmm. all about the old-timers, and I'm like, what about the... Yeah. Roenick even had more, he had more play because he was broadcasting, yeah. but yeah, where's Chelly in the, bring him out on the ice, I guess.
Chelly's around town, he's on his boat, he's doing things, so
he's on his I once saw him I was just sitting right down here by the river, and it was lunchtime, and it was a paddle, what do they call it, paddle board kind of things, with standing paddle things.
Yeah, stand up paddle.
Chris Chelly just kind of waddled by, and he kind of gave a wave. I'm like, that's Chris Chelios. Chelly's just on the river. I love it.
Nice.
More coming in. Let's keep going. Let's go to John. John is in Munster. John, what do you want to brag about?
Yeah, you know, I have this 1991 Mike Singletary Invitational Pool program that I participated in, and most of the players signed it, Buddy Ryan, Bud Kiss.
You mean like billiards or like backyard pool?
Yeah, no, it was a billiards tournament held at Navy Pier in the big
I was hoping it was backyard
area.
Pool.
Yeah, that would have been fun. You know, I used to play water polo, but my horse drowned, so.
Yeah. So, okay.
Yeah, and then the other thing I have is my family bought 40 acres of land out in the outside of Chicago from George Halas. So I have 63 deeds that are all individually signed by Halas.
Wow.
And I wonder if there's any value to those.
I wonder if there's value to the deeds, because you're not a real estate guy. You're not going to know what the acres of land are worth. But the but when you have the deeds, the actual piece of memorabilia that has George Halas's
right, and there's a lot of correspondence with that, with, you know, a lot of letters signed by George.
Right. No, that's awesome, and it's going to be hard to compare, you know, to get a price. So that's something you're just going to have to maybe shoot high and do an auction, and hopefully it goes up from your price. And if they're all the same, I would maybe just try to, you know, list them separately or one at a time if you can. If
yeah,
it doesn't,
yeah,
if it doesn't.
There's a few that are signed with Comiskey, that I guess they were partners in some of the land. So there's some that are signed Halas and Comiskey. So kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool.
That is very good.
Thanks, John.
All right, thanks.
Thanks for calling.
312-981-7200. It's the Swap Meets. 720 WGN, Steve Cochran Show, Justin Kaufman in for Steve, back on Monday. 312-981-7200. I want to make it clear, Mary, you know this, but to the listener as well, because this always happens, we get a run on certain things. Like, you'll get the first caller, it'll be about sports, so then you get everybody calling about sports. But the Swap Meet is not only about sports. There are a lot of other things, memorabilia, pop culture, art, and like I said, the really fun stuff, where it's the Chicago. I am partial to the Chicago history, like political history memorabilia. Like, someone had a Robert Kennedy poster last week, but there's a lot of other things that you can do.
The 630 texting in if there's any value to Beanie Babies.
Yes.
Not really. Everyone tends to think the Princess Diana Beanie Baby is it's still sought after. There's actually websites devoted to how to tell if you have that $4,000 Beanie Baby. There's like a four-step process of checking down, you know, what the tag looks like, how close the letter or the lines and the sentences of the poem are together. There's a whole cult following to that, and it's like a needle in a haystack. So, but generally, they're like 50 cents to a dollar. I mean,
really?
I
you don't have the $4,000 one, it's 50 cents?
No.
And how about a box of the perfectly wrapped McDonald's Beanie Babies that have been stored in a closet in my basement for years, and that's my retirement.
Oh, I'm sorry. I hope you have a better backup to that.
Dave Bennett, how did you acquire those? You don't eat at McDonald's.
I didn't eat the McDonald's, but my kids did when they were little.
There you go.
And we saved them.
And you said, "Don't play with those. I'm going to save."
No,
those.
They weren't for playing with.
They're just for memorabilia.
They were an investment.
Play with your food. Yeah. Joanne, what do you got?
I've got a Santa's Village from either late 60s or 70s. It was a pocket ashtray pop-up.
Pocket ashtray pop-up.
What's a pop-up?
The top of the... It's an ashtray you keep in your pocket. It closes and
opens up. Yeah, it's kind of swivels to the left or right.
No, actually pops up and down.
Oh, okay.
And it snaps in and out.
Regardless, Santa's Village stuff is highly collectible. I do really well with that. I'll find it for a quarter at a garage sale and sell for $16 to $50, depending what it is. The pennants are worth the most because they got the biggest graphic. But yeah, any amusement park. If you have the early Marriott's Great America, the souvenir maps can go as high as $75.
You don't know this, but Joanne is a theme park enthusiast, that's why she also has that.
Anything dispenses Kitty Kingdom.
Even toys I found that have the dispenses price tag, that affects the value right there.
Love it.
And I used to live right there, you know, right by there, and I miss that place.
Showbiz pizza, that stuff.
Even more, she's right on it.
Oh, yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, Showbiz, I found a Showbiz pizza wallet at a garage sale for 25 cents, is sold for $50.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. Even the tokens, like if you can find some Showbiz tokens, like two or three of them go for about $15.
Yep.
Yeah, she's right after my heart. She's got it all.
There you go. All right, let's keep going here. Let's try Joanne in Sugar Grove. Joanne, what do you want to brag about, Joanne?
Well, mine is not sports related. I have a collection of porcelain musical melody clowns. Do you know anything about those?
So give us a little bit more information. Yeah. Where'd you get them?
I think it's like a collectible store.
Okay. So you already bought them in a collectible form. It wasn't something you've collected over time.
No, I didn't buy it as a collection. We bought them individually, and they're porcelain. And they're not the shiny porcelain. They're the matte porcelain. And each one plays a different tune. There's a whistler one, and one plays a guitar, and one strings on a banjo.
A clown band.
Pardon me?
Porcelain clown band.
Right, exactly.
On average, they're between $30 and $50 a piece.
Oh, okay. With the box in
right.
good condition.
Yeah, with the box even, 50 at the most. You might have one or two that might be worth a little bit more than that.
The bass player.
And where could I take those, do you think?
That's something you probably want to just sell online. I don't think many, antique shops would be interested in those.
Okay. All right. Well,
thanks,
I appreciate
Joanne.
Your help. Thank you.
I take it to Target and be like, I can't find the receipt.
Right.
But I know
store
they're
credit.
The box, right? Let's go to James. James is in Wisconsin. James, what do you want to brag about?
I've got probably about 75 lead toy soldiers from the 1890s. They are signed by the artist.
Wow. From 1890, did you just say?
Yes, 1890.
Wow. It's so great to know that the toys of that generation were full 100% lead.
Lead, right. The safe lead.
Right. Yeah.
Oh. Safe.
Yeah.
Did you used to play with those when you were a kid?
Of course.
Well, those are always interesting because they vary in their value based, but the year, of course, I mean, you're talking 130 years here. Right?
Yeah, some go as high as $2,000. Some can be as low as $12. Signed is a different story. I just would do an auction for sure if you're going to part with them.
Interesting, though. Thanks, James.
All right. Have a good day, bud.
Thank you.
That's good. All right.
Those are toys standing the test of time, though.
Right.
Our kids break stuff.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh. I have no toys that...
Buy two.
Buy two. The Greg Flam method and the Dave Ennett method.
Right. Play with one, store
play
the other.
Play with one, store the other. That's
exactly right.
Yep. All right. Let's see. Keep going here. Let's try Andy in Winfield. Andy, what do you want to brag about?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, I recently have come into possession of a 1992 USA basketball signed by the entire Dream Team.
Wow.
So that's the original Dream Team, not the Allen Iverson team that lost.
Yeah, the original Dream Team.
Wow.
Can you imagine being a Dream Team? Didn't it ruin the Dream Team? Didn't they end the Dream Team because that one team flared out? Wasn't there a couple Bulls on that team? Wasn't like Elton Brand or I feel like
Jordan and Pippen for sure.
Well, they were on the original.
They were
team.
On the original.
I'm saying the team that Kurt Heinrich led.
That was kind of the end of
team
the
USA,
Dream Team
right.
era.
The Dream Team era ended when we didn't win a gold. For the Dream Team stuff, I mean, they obviously have Chicago connections because of Jordan and Pippen, but overall, is that stuff worth anything?
Just last week, one sold. Had the certificate of authenticity sold for $4,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, team signed. So
there you go. If you got it, there you go.
Hopefully yours is authenticated. If not, it'd probably be a good idea to pay to have it done so you can get the money.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
There's a texter from the 630. They want to know if there's any value to an old beer can collection, mostly from the 1970s.
Not so much. Probably a quarter to a dollar a piece. The whole collection, it will average probably less than that if they sold the whole collection. But
and I'll wrap it right here with 815. Who says they have a birthday card. This is my winner for the day.
Okay.
They have a birthday card they got from Garfield Goose for their fifth birthday. That's pretty great.
It is. It's along the lines of a souvenir Santa's Village type thing.
That's amazing.
I'm going to say $50 start auction. It could go higher than that.
Or frame it.
Right.
And put it in your foyer. Well, you got always everything that got to be about money. That one in particular, I'd be showing that every time I had a little party. People come over. You want to see something cool?
Sometimes the story is better than the item. Yeah. So, like you said, hang it in the.
And I want to say something also. Last week I was talking about my stool. I changed stools. That came out wrong. But the idea being that we have kitchen stools and we went to IKEA and got new ones. And my wife was like, well, these are our old ones should be thrown away. And I did the Chicago way where I put them in the alleyway.
Mm-hmm.
They got taken.
Yep. People will recover them, reupholster or do
something.
Neighbor.
My neighbor's like, hey, what's up with these chairs? I'm like, oh my gosh, you've saved my marriage. Thank you. Take them. So they have found a
that's
good
awesome.
Home. So that's good. Greg Flam, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. He can be found in the Palatine location of Wolf's Flea Market, sponsor of this segment. And we will be out at Wolf's at the Allstate Arena.
Rosemont, right?
At Rosemont, coming up on Sunday.
Sunday.
We'll do it in the morning, 9:30, that kind of thing. But we'll be out there. We'll have a great time. There'll be more information at WGNRadio.com. Mm-hmm. But you should come out if you want to. We're going to record it and actually do some live stuff with Facebook. But the point being, if you want to come out and brag about your stuff in person, both Pete will be there as well, but Greg and I will be there, and we can entertain your dreams of retiring early, Dave right. Bennett.
Will you take my mini Beanie Babies from McDonald's?
Somebody there will.
Somebody will.
The 600-plus vendors there.
There you go. All right, coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, CLTV joins us. Hi, CLTV. And also, we're going to have a live performance from Half Gringa, a great Chicago band who is opening up for the Flaming Lips at the Taste of Chicago, which is underway. And also, King John, John Williams, join us later in the hour. Talk Thomas Jefferson.
Well, this is definitely Wacker Drive. My estimations are correct. We should be very close.
Steve Cochran on 720 WGN.
In for Steve this morning. Steve's out till Monday. Justin Kaufman here. Steve Cochran's show rolling along in this 9 o'clock hour. Also simulcast on CLTV if you want to watch us. Dave Bennett, Mary Sandberg, Steve Rozanich, Joanne Jeanette. It's a good hour we've got. King John, John Williams coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour a little bit later. Also, the Taste of Chicago is underway in Grant Park. I would assume that's where you're heading right after the show, Mary.
Oh, yeah. 5-day-long festival. I got to get it in.
Yeah. It's been kind of annoying. Mary has skipped out on all of her duties because she wants to be the first person there and the last person to leave.
Well, she really likes going to lunch, and what better place to go to lunch than Taste of Chicago?
That's right. I love standing and eating food with other people bumping up against my arms.
Who doesn't love that, right? The one thing about the Taste of Chicago that you can always bet on is great music. There's great lineups, and I really give it to the city credit to be able to put together not just to spotlight some of the national acts and touring acts like Flaming Lips or Mos Def and Talib Kweli coming through, but the local acts as well. Coming up this weekend at Taste of Chicago, the Chicago band Half Gringa will be opening for the Flaming Lips on Saturday. Their album, the LP called Gruñona, put out last year. We had them in Studio 435 here on WGN a couple months back, Pete. In our studio today, singer-songwriter Izzy Olive on guitar and Lucy Little is on the violin. Excited to get some live music here. They're in our Skyline studio. Half Gringa, they're going to kick it off here with a song called Wearing White. Take it away.
I'm wearing white, I'm wearing
go. Live in studio, Half Gringa, Izzy Olive on guitar, Lucy Little on the violin. They are opening up for the Flaming Lips at Taste of Chicago at the Petrillo Music Show coming up on Saturday. We'll continue. We'll get another song from these guys, and we'll also talk with Izzy and Lucy coming up here. Flaming Lips here, 720 WGN. Steve Cochran Show. Steve's out till Monday. Justin Kaufman here with Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Brzanich, Joanne Jeanette, and the band Half Gringa, which just performed live. They're playing A Taste of Chicago Saturday, opening up for the Flaming Lips. Their album, Grunyona. You get that right every time. This is a long-standing problem for me because we've talked before. But the album was considered was named one of the top 10 albums of 2017 by Chicago Magazine. And Half Gringa, a great band, Izzy Olive and Lucy Little in studio. We're going to hear a little bit more live music. But for both, thanks for being here. Good to see you again.
Thanks for having us again.
So this experience, the idea of playing Petrillo Music Shell in the city of Chicago, downtown Grant Park, as part of Taste of Chicago, what does that mean to you?
It's pretty big time for us. Yeah, this is definitely the biggest show that we will have played up until this point. So we're pretty psyched.
It is a different environment too, because there'll be festivals and outdoor festivals where people pay tickets to go see, and it's maybe it's a rock festival or an indie festival. But this is a food festival with music. How do you approach a show like this, knowing that it's free and people are lounging in the lawn and are maybe not paying attention?
Walk back and forth. In front of the stage.
Right. How do you focus yourself as a musician for this kind of gig?
Well, we thought a lot about what our set was going to be for this show, mostly just because we knew it's going to be a lot of people that have not heard us before, and that it's sort of our job to get people's attention, to get them excited for Les Butcherettes and for the Flaming Lips. So we really put a lot of that into what songs we're going to play, the order, and we might have a couple little surprises here and there.
Oh, that's good. You always get surprises when you're playing for the kind of music that you do play. I mean, it's a very intimate style. We heard it just here, but it's also very thoughtful and it's very focused. The lyrics are, there's intersections about race and sex and class and all that kind of stuff that goes in. Not to say that it's at that level where it's just, all the music is thoughtful. It's balanced. But my question is, how do you do that kind of song or that kind of music when you're in an environment where there's a ton of turkey legs?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, I've always made it a point to have thoughtful lyrics with something that is really sort of catchy, or just something that people can kind of latch on to musically. Like I find myself singing songs and I realize, like, oh, these lyrics are kind of intense or like make me think a lot, but it's like the song is so darn catchy that, like, you just keep repeating it. And I think that's kind of like the goal that we have, especially for this show, is like to get people sort of hooked onto the music and then have them think a little bit more later about the lyrics.
It's so funny you talk about lyrics. That song, I don't know who sings it, but where it says "bite that tattoo on your shoulder," that was popular last summer, and my husband and I and our two kids sing it out loud together, and then you're like,
"What is that?"
Wait a minute, Catherine's 14 now, and it's like, "Bite that tattoo on my shoulder," but it's so catchy, you don't even know what you're saying.
Right?
You're talking about this being the biggest venue for you guys to play, but Lucy, you've got quite a history of playing for some pretty big situations: the White House, Oprah Winfrey Show, David Letterman, all before you were like 16.
Yeah, I say that I peaked when I was 14 when I had the opportunity to perform at Carnegie Hall. So this is actually going to be my biggest show since
Carnegie,
which is very exciting.
Well, I mean, there's so many options and opportunities for multi-instrumentalists in the classical form to play violin in other places. What advice do you have for Izzy and for rock musicians who may be more comfortable in the back of a bar?
Wow. I actually feel like I need to ask for their advice. I think when you come from the classical training space, which is brilliant, and I'm glad I have that training, you oftentimes are not trained to really learn how to listen and play with others in a way that's more informal, if you don't have music in front of you. And so I feel like I've actually learned so much from the non-classical musicians that I've been playing with as I've been getting out of classical music.
Do you write your own music?
I have my own project, yeah, and in this space, I do the violin arrangements, but it feels like a very collaborative space. I work a lot with our other guitar player, Sam. to kind of see how our parts are going to blend together.
It seems like a no-brainer to have the violin involved in Half Gringa, just in the music that you play and when you were here before and you played live. How important is it for you to have different instrumentations and different instruments involved in the band?
Super important, especially because, like, I think when I'm writing, I'm thinking a lot about, like, melodic voice, and I like to do a lot of things where the guitar part that I'm playing matches what I'm singing, and it's nice to, like, bring something to the full band and hear, like, Ivan on the trumpet try and figure something out that sort of, like, matches or coheeds with that in a specific way, and Lucy does the same thing, so it's really, yeah, it's really nice to have different voices.
So the 2017 album, Grignona, it obviously, like I said, top 10 albums, Chicago Magazine, well-received. You have been able to tour off of that, and you're getting a ton of opportunities, including this Taste of Chicago gig. What's next? I mean, let's talk about the next album. I mean, does this, are you at that point now that it's been far enough removed that there are new songs and new plans for the band?
Yeah, I've demoed the whole next record, and we've just started figuring out, like, what the recording schedule is going to be and sort of talked about that, and we'll talk more about that post-Taste. And yeah, I'm excited. I think this record is not what I thought it was going to be for my second record, but in a good way, for sure. It's hard to like plan, but now I kind of see it now that it's all in front of me, and I'm really excited to figure more of that out in the next couple months.
Well, the band is Half Gringa, and they're gonna perform one more song here. What are we gonna hear?
We're gonna hear a new song. It's called 1990 Nothing.
1990 Nothing, great name for a song. Half Gringa in studio. They are playing at Taste of Chicago on Saturday. They're opening up for the Flaming Lips, Chicago band. The last album, the 2017 album Grignona, was named to the top 10 albums of the year by Chicago Magazine. Izzy Olive is a singer-songwriter who's on guitar. Lucy Little is on the violin. Here they are, live in our Skyline studio, Half Gringa, 1990 Nothing. Take it away.
I settle on everything inside. 1991 was good to you and I. I had hopes for something outside of this state. Now I feel it in my hands, my voice, my space. The lake is your guardian, palm in my lucky charm. You'll break my arm and I'll cry for my mother. The gifts you overthought and can't get me to take. You and only you would dare treat me this way. Get in the car, you scream at her while I'm in pain. I said I'd go before I start to go insane. With the lake as your guardian, palm in my lucky charm. You'll break my arm and I'll cry for my mother. I'll cry for my mother. I'll cry for my mother. 1990 nothing. 1990 nothing. 1990 nothing. For my mother, I'll cry for my mother.
Yeah, Yeah, there you go. Yes, Half Gringa live, 720 WGN. They will be at the Taste of Chicago this Saturday, opening up for the Flaming Lips. Their album, Grunyona, is out. It's out in 2017, named one of the top 10 albums by Chicago Magazine. Live in studio, that song, 1990 Nothing. Izzy Olive and Lucy Little. Izzy, Lucy, thanks so much for being here. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Great to have them here. Live music on the Cochrane Show. Coming up, King John. John Williams joins us. Talk Thomas Jefferson.
This is the Steve Cochrane Show on 720 WGN.
It's good to be king.
Steve, out until Monday.
Just for a while.
But we'll be ready to rock tomorrow. Great show lined up tomorrow. A lot of great people coming through. Including some people from the new HBO show Sharp Objects. We're going to play a little bit of Bo Burnham, the stand-up comedian, who's also the filmmaker behind the new film Eighth Grade, which is getting a lot of buzz.
We'll give the listeners an update on your air conditioning situation.
Yeah, that's happening.
Tune in at
concurrently.
650.
Yeah. Wherever there's a space in the show tomorrow, it's going to be
You can carve out some space, too. Maybe blow out a guest.
Yeah, exactly, because the people need to know. King John's here. John Williams, of course, who is on every day here at WGN Radio. Except Sundays. You're not here Sundays.
That's right.
I
do Saturdays from 10 a.m. till noon, and Monday through Friday, 1 to 3.
And John, of course, also does the highly successful, wildly popular shows where he will interview interview historical characters on stage at the College of DuPage at the Mac Center, and that new one coming up with Thomas Jefferson is coming up on the 18th of August. I've had you on the download to talk about this. I love this concept of having a conversation from someone from history. Where does it come from, first of all?
Before that, I want to give the title of the show, Thank You, Thomas Jefferson.
We needed that. Every year we got to come up with a title. I thought that one fit.
What's the genesis of this idea?
You know, it's more about the guy. I was not a historian. I wasn't a Jefferson buff. Now I consider myself a Jeffersonian. But I met this guy, and just to peek behind the curtains for a second, I was in Minnesota doing a show. He's an historian. He was traveling, speaking to the State Bankers Association up there. The PR guy called and said, hey, do you want to interview a historian about presidents? And I said, no. And they said, I'm not really good at that. And they said, well, you know, Clinton, I think, was president, or Bush at the time, but, you know, he can talk about that and then put them in perspective where they are. And I said, okay, I got a half hour. So I put him on, talked to him a little bit about that. Went into a break, and I said, I understand that you recreate presidential characters on stage. Would you come back after this commercial break as Thomas Jefferson? He said yes.
Why'd you pick Thomas Jefferson?
Well, he did. He does about five characters, and Jefferson is a big
one. Mm-hmm.
So we said, all right, come back as Thomas Jefferson after the break. And I'm talking to him for 2 minutes, and I look down, and all the phone lines are ringing, and people had questions for him. I wasn't even sure if he was the guy that wrote the Declaration of the Constitution. I'm like,
Which one chopped down the cherry tree?
I know. Right. I'm like, really? So I was really ignorant about all of that. But he makes you believe. You really forget quickly that that's not Thomas Jefferson or Teddy Roosevelt.
I would assume that there's even a resurgence in the modern times of Thomas Jefferson because of the role in Hamilton, of course, and more and more generations being exposed to Thomas Jefferson in a different way. Do you see that playing out? Because you do these shows every year. Do you see it playing out that more younger generations, or at least a renewed interest in Thomas Jefferson?
I would say that, and you're right, Justin. It's evolved. I mean, when he and I were first doing it, my relationship with Jefferson was relatively new. So I was learning, our audience was learning a lot about him. But then the politics of the day, I mean, we went through the Clinton impeachment. We went through the weapons of mass destruction. People, just think about all the last political highlights of the last 20 years. What would you ask a founding father about it? And people have. So you can imagine what they ask him about now. It's a whole litany of things. So depending on what the current mood is, you get a different show. These are unrehearsed, spontaneous conversations.
Well, plus you also, the audience gets to ask questions, so you don't know what the responses are going to be.
You never do.
Until
you never do. And you, Sally Hemings, his slave mistress, people will invariably ask about that, and he'll get ticked off. I mean, two things will...
As a character or as the actor's like, I don't want to talk...
I'm not sure, but the character sure is, and I think he is too. There's two things that will always ring his bell.
people pushing him about Sally Hemings. He'll say, what a waste of your time. Why do you care? And or something to that effect. And Alexander Hamilton.
Really?
Hamilton ticks him off.
Well, now he's going to have great jealousy for Hamilton.
I know. I go, have you seen the show? It's really good.
Thank you, Thomas Jefferson. We needed that, which is sponsored by American Sale. Tickets on sale now. It's College DuPage, August 18th. Dave, you got something?
Does he slip in and out of character? Is it easy for him to not be Thomas Jefferson?
He's never slipped out on stage. Mm-hmm. And I asked him about it once off stage.
That sounds like a drop for Nick DiGilio.
Hi, Nick. You can have that one. I'll even think of a saucier one for you in a minute here. But you know, Dave, only one time did he say he was stumped where Jefferson should know. And it was when he first started doing it. He was doing it for his daughter's school. And he was just then toying with the idea. And somebody asked a question about an in-law of his. And he didn't know the answer. And the kid, some, you know, smart sixth grader did. And he goes, I can't do this if I don't know all the answers. So now he is arguably the greatest Jefferson scholar in America. When Ken Burns did his documentary, he was the lead interview. You know, he's written a lot of books.
That's
about
great.
Him. And where Jefferson wrote 27,000 letters or 16,000 letters, Jefferson didn't memorize them. My guy did.
You can buy them online at WGNradio.com/events. You can also call the Mac box office at 630-942-4000. Tuesdays through Sundays, noon to 6 p.m.
That's my favorite part of that. Whenever we read the stuff about it, I always say the Mac box office and give the hours. I'm like, peculiar hours.
I know.
Like 12 to 6 and on Tuesday, and then on Thursday it's 2 to 4. It's the whole thing. I just always find that.
I'll ask Jefferson what he thinks about that.
Yeah, what does he think
of
the Mac box office?
Do you think that they should ban the box office hours? Because people ask him about sports. They'll ask him about things out of his wheelhouse, too. So if you are intrigued by what the world was like 250 years ago, ask him. He will give you a credible in-person answer. Mm-hmm. If you want to know what he thinks about impeaching a president, and do we make it too easy or too hard, he has pronounced views about that. That is, Jefferson has pronounced views about
the,
that.
The scholar is Clay Jenkinson. He plays Thomas Jefferson. The show is Thank You, Thomas Jefferson. We needed that. Sponsored by American Sale. Tickets on sale. All right. Let's take a quick break to find out what's coming up in the news, and we'll come back and see what's coming up on John Williams' show today at 1 o'clock. Always a great show.
Thank you.
I have a question, Mr. Jefferson. What do you think of Alexander Hamilton?
One woman in the crowd one time asked a question about Sally Hemings, and you know, they got ticked off at each other. You know, he said, I resent the question and I don't like you for asking it and stuff like that. And you know, and Jefferson was a deist too. Right? So he didn't believe in the Holy Trinity. He didn't believe in a lot of things that Christians and Catholics believe. One of our more recent shows, afterwards backstage, somebody had won an opportunity to meet John Williams and Thomas Jefferson after the show. And the woman came up to him and she said, I want you to get down on your knees and pray to your Lord Jesus Christ that he'll accept you into the kingdom, but you will not get there with these views. And we're like, you know, he's not really Jefferson, right? But she couldn't. She was still.
Or she was just really good. She was in character, too. You guys got bamboozled, right?
More that, yeah.
We've been texting all day, John. This could be a good, if you don't have a good segment for your show today.
Yeah. Your air conditioning?
No, not my air conditioning. We were talking the text question today based on what happened after the England team lost in the World Cup. There was a great viral video of watching the fans in Moscow in unison sing Oasis's Don't Look Back in Anger to serenade the losing football club.
Wow.
And we asked a ton of listeners, and we got great responses on what would be the, in a hypothetical, in a fantastical world where U.S. soccer mattered.
Right.
If they got to that point and lost, and we were in Moscow and there were 15,000 people, what song would we be serenading the football club with? What would be the American version?
We are singing this to the
Americans.
Our own team that lost.
Our own team members. Yeah.
And so, it's but we've lost.
We've lost.
This is us saying,
yeah, it was a good ride.
Don't cry for me, Argentina.
You're right. There you go.
Something that's, yeah, sort of, right. you gave it your best shot, right. But the.
Someone, 312 had Pat Benatar hit me with your best shot.
Yeah. I'll have to get back to you on
I know,
that.
But if you want, you can take that. You can run with that all day. That could be just a through line on WGN all day today.
Or the other thing we just found out, John has something in common with Dave Ennett. They both have Beanie Baby McDonald's collection.
Yes, yeah.
So they could take texts on who's
and neither of us are making any money
no
on
money.
Them.
No money. But John won up to you because he's got the McDonald's display.
I had the McDonald's collection and the McDonald's display, which I think was given to me here at WGN as kind of a corporate promotional swag thing. And then I hung on to it because I'm no dummy.
Right.
You know, I got kids who got to go to college someday. Right. So that paid for about 40 seconds at Butler.
Right. Well, what do you got coming on the show today?
Well, we're going to visit with some of the folks from the Heartland, I think it's Institute. It might not be that, but it's the group associated with the name Heartland here in Chicago. And they are taking care of some of these children separated from their parents, the migrants who have come across, separated from their parents.
Story,
you know, they've been farmed out to locations across the country. Some of them are in Chicago. We missed the deadline as a country Tuesday to reunify these kids with their parents. So what's happening with those kids? Where are they? What are the conditions? You know, you and Mary were talking off the air about, are some of these kids being used as props? Do we know that the parents are always the people that they say they are?
And what does it take for a government to suss that out? How much time? Are they being unfairly prosecuted in the public court of opinion about how long it takes to come back? Because
On Monday, there was a woman who said her 3-year-old daughter didn't recognize her after being separated for that amount of weeks. And you know, I don't know the average 3-year-old, if you always recognize, is it really the mom or not the mom? You know,
there's a lot of questions involved with that. I mean, obviously, we want it to be expedient and it needs to be efficient, the process. But there are still a lot of questions that government agencies have to ask in that situation. That's a great conversation. That's coming up.
We'll do that a little after one.
All right. Well, coming up next, Bill and Wendy. Bill out today. Frank Fontana in studio. And Wendy, of course. Hi, Wendy.
Hello.
Hey, guys.
I like switching it up every day. A different partner
like
every
it.
Day.
Good to see you, Frank. Good to see you.
Nick's going
to
use that one on his show.
Of course.
What song would you use if the American soccer team, football, lost in the World Cup, and we were all in Moscow together, and there were 15,000 people in unison singing an American song to the American team that lost, what would it be? Yesterday, the English team, they sang Oasis's Don't Look Back in Anger. The crowd is amazing. Check it out. There's a viral video of thousands of people singing that song to the English team that lost. So what would be the American version? People say Born in the USA. People say...
Yeah, how about James Brown? A little bit of a Coming to America
from
Rocky.
Oh, that's good. Go. I was going to say bye-bye, Miss American Pie.
That was a winner on the text
line,
too.
Wendy's song that she sings on stage would be perfect for this. Boots are made for walking. Get out of here, guys.
But wait a minute. But are we singing this in anger at our own team
to console them? Because I think Don't Look Back in Anger is that concept was, hey, this is the... I mean, Oasis is essentially the theme band for all of England. So this idea of Don't Look Back in Anger, you did a good job. Don't look back. We have fond memories of what you tried to accomplish here.
I was thinking, Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley.
Yeah. Hang Down Your Head and cry.
Hang Down Your Head, Tom Dooley. Poor boy, you're bound to die.
Yeah.
But maybe we don't serenade our teams after they lose, though.
No, we don't.
No, we just leave.
Kick them to the curb.
Yeah. But I think most of the world wanted England to... I wanted England to win. I saw them in the World Cup winning the whole thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have
you
a lot of Croatian
in your pool?
Friends.
In my pool.
I was going to Croatia. Plus, I know a lot of swear words in Croatian.
Like what, Wendy?
I get what you're trying to do.
What do you guys got coming up on the show?
David Hochberg will be in today, Dean Richards, and then Frank and I are going to escape the political atmosphere and have some fun today.
That's Emmy nominations coming up in the next hour, too.
So. Oh, yeah, we'll have that.
Dean will have that stuff, sure. All right, we'll take it away.